It's Bernie and Sid in the morning on the world famous
Talk Radio 77 WABC.
I was looking at all the life. There were plants and birds and rocks and things. There was sand and hills and rain. The first thing I met was a fly with a buzz and the sky with no clouds. The heat was hot and the ground was dry, but the air was full of sound. I've been through the desert on a horse with no name.
Been through the desert on a horse with no name. Oftentimes, if not all the time, sports. That's where you go to see what's really going on in life. And I don't mean that sarcastically. I mean that in the most serious of fashion. And, of course, the latest news, which shows you just how ass-backwards our life is these days, talking about sports, a major, major event in New York. Some say the biggest event of the year. You can include parades and whatever you want. Over 120,000 people show up at the Belmont every year for the third and final leg of the Triple Crown. The Kentucky Derby is always in May. The Preakness is always in May. Then you get the Belmont in June. In fact, June 6th was supposed to be the date for the Belmont this year. The third and final leg in the horse's attempts to win the Triple Crown, which, by the way, we had just 2 years ago when Bob Baffert's horse Justify won the Triple Crown in 2018. Anyway, now we get the Belmont Stakes has been moved from June 6th to June 20th, and it goes from the third and final leg of the Triple Crown to this year being the first leg of the Triple Crown because the Kentucky Derby has been suspended and postponed until September. And the Preakness, usually the second leg, is now the final leg, and that's in October. If you're confused, you should be, because life at this point, Bernard, is very confusing.
Well, let me ask you, where do they usually have the Preakness?
It's in Baltimore. Pimlico.
Okay, yes. So the place, the epicenter of the pandemic is the place where they're going to have the first event.
Right, but it doesn't matter because there are no fans. No fans at any of these events. And also, because it's the first leg, usually, Bernard, that is the longest of the three races. The horses run a mile and a half. This year, because it's the first leg, they've cut that to a mile and one-eighth. They don't want to burn these horses out, even though, again, they've got like a three-month period between the first leg and the second leg, which this year is the Kentucky Derby. But yes, it is the epicenter here, but no fans at any of these events.
Well, yeah, that's pretty much par for the course this year.
It's a killer.
No fans.
120,000 people. Oh. That area does so well with business.
I know. It's a party. It's a huge party. I know people who have gone. I have never gone. But, yeah, they drink. They have mint juleps.
Well, mint julep is usually the Kentucky Derby.
I know, but they replicate that.
Yeah.
That same sort of nonsense, if you ask me, because I always couldn't stand the whole idea of it.
I know. But,
still, people are having a good time. God bless.
No, listen, the Belmont in June, Saratoga, upstate New York by Glens Falls, and up there in August. Horse racing this time of year is huge in New York. But it just keeps going back to what the governor, Andrew Cuomo, keeps talking about, Bernie, which is, I want sports back. I want baseball. I want basketball. I want hockey. I want football. But no fans. I don't want any fans, not anytime soon. In fact, here he was again yesterday saying the same thing at his daily briefing. Governor Andrew Cuomo, sports but no fans.
When a team plays, even if there's no one in the stands, it gets broadcast. And that gives people at home entertainment value, something to participate in. Another reason, frankly, to stay home as opposed to
66%.
Go out. And staying home is good right now.
Really?
I encourage the sports teams. And again, New York will be a full partner. Anything we can do to make it happen and make it happen safely, we will.
Right. So we'll be a full partner, but we don't want bands. And how about what he says there? What you just said is right, Bernie, because we found out a couple of weeks ago that 67% of the cases were folks that stayed at home. And there's Cuomo saying, the good news is you get to stay at home.
Does he not listen to himself when he speaks and how shocked he was when he found out that it was people who were at home? I mean, they'd be better off out there, perhaps, at the Belmont, outdoors, you know, in the outskirts, the outside, tailgating, whatever they do at the Belmont. They sit in the grass along the highways and they get drunk. Yeah. They might be better off than sitting there than sitting at home. Of course they'd be better off. And it's the middle of summer. I mean, you know, just come on.
Listen,
it's usually a very hot day in the sun.
It's warm. It's usually in June, so it's a warm day. Whether it's the 70s, 80s, or 90s, you're going to be fine. And I encourage all you folks out there, and I do this every day. It's petulant. It's childish. It's rebellious. But I do it every day. A couple days ago, I saw Michael Strahan on Instagram wearing a mask outdoors on a gorgeous day, and I ripped him. Which, by the way, led to his followers on Instagram ripping me. And I did the same thing yesterday with Eyewitness News anchor Bill Ritter walking through Central Park last night wearing his mask and proud of it. Folks, what are you proud of? As I said to Bill, all you're doing is continuing to promote fear, paranoia, sadness. Even Pat Kiernan, that idiot from New York One, said it yesterday.
That stupid Canuck.
He is a stupid Canuck, but he said it yesterday, and he's right. They were talking about restaurants reopening in New York City. And the ladies were saying, they showed a picture of a restaurant and what they plan on doing. And it showed the maitre d', the host, and six waiters and waitresses all wearing masks. And Pat Kiernan said, I'm not going there. Which I know I've said to you a million times. You said, listen, if they reopen, I'll wear a mask. And I've said, no, I'm not wearing a mask. And Pat Kiernan said yesterday, look, it's disconcerting. It's not comforting. It doesn't make me feel better. When I see somebody wearing a mask, like I've said all along, it reminds me that we're a sick society. I don't want to go into a restaurant, see people wearing masks. I don't want to go into the park and see people wearing masks. So for the first time maybe ever, Pat Kiernan and Sid Rosenberg agreed yesterday, I don't want to see the masks.
So what is the solution?
Do it without them. To all social right. distance. If you social distance, you don't need a mask.
What if they say,
yeah.
We will reopen as long as when you go in, you wear a mask. The only time you pull it off is if you're eating.
I'll stay home. I'll eat at home. I'm fine.
I would rather have the businesses open. I really would.
No, you can have them open. I'm not going to go. I can't stand it. I can't stand seeing people walking around wearing masks.
I don't wear one myself. In fact, there was one store in Kentucky. They put a sign out of their convenience store outside. They say, no masks allowed.
Beautiful.
If you want to wear a mask, go somewhere else.
I love it.
They actually put a sign out.
I'm going to travel to Kentucky and go to that guy's place. So I encourage you folks to go on Instagram and Twitter, find famous people wearing masks, and just rip them and ask them to provide the science of why they think it works. Yes, if somebody is standing 1 foot in front of you and happens to sneeze right in your face, you may be in some trouble. Maybe. Otherwise, you're not getting it. Not outside, no way. So make them provide that information. So that's one of the big stories today, the Belmont Stakes here in New York City. The other, of course, Memorial Day weekend coming up on Friday. It is the opening weekend of the summer. Getting ready to go to the Hamptons, Fire Island, the Jersey Shore, upstate New York. The beaches should be packed. And all of a sudden, our mayor, Bill de Blasio, who has been yelling and screaming about shutting down the beaches, and said, and I quote, they will physically pull people out of the water. They will pull you out of the water if they find you in the ocean on the beach.
Yeah, bitch.
Now, yesterday, he's got a big problem with Nassau County, it seems like. Long Island specifically. Long Island saying only residents can go to our beaches. De Blasio says, no. If my guys and gals from New York City want to go to Long Island, you really can't stop them. Here's Bill de Blasio yesterday sticking up for folks like me and taking out Nassau County.
But they're going to put limits on the total number of people in their beaches. This should not be about any ill feeling towards people, depending on where they come from. This is about there are real clear limits on the beaches that will be open, and everyone needs to respect that to keep us all healthy and safe in the entire metropolitan area.
All right, so Bernie, you're a Long Island snob. Well, what's going on with you guys? What do you mean you don't want people like me to come to your beaches?
Well, first, let me just say this. Bill de Blasio should have been prepared to reopen the beaches in New York City. He's deflecting. He's distracting. These beaches should. He was not prepared to reopen the. He didn't think ahead. He said a couple of weeks ago, "We're not going to pay the lifeguards." We're not. He just decided he wasn't, or he was too incompetent to do it. So that's A. I mean, sheer incompetence and laziness on the part of. This lazy-ass slob mayor of ours for having to put the counties, the surrounding counties, in this position. But I will say this. The state beaches are open. In other words, if you want to go to Jones Beach, it's open. Go to Jones Beach. Have a good time. The other beaches are worried. They have to abide by the limits of 50% capacity, which is what Cuomo is telling them to do. So their thinking, from what I understand, is that if people from New York City come out, in addition to our own residents, we can't contain it to 50%.
Right.
So they're sort of stuck between a rock and a hard place. And that's it all comes down to the lazy-ass slobs, incompetence, and laziness. That's what it comes down to. He should have had these beaches ready to go, lifeguards ready to go. He did not. He was engaged in malfeasance. I don't know what he was doing. I don't know what the hell he was doing.
No, he was not prepared. You're right. By the way, the federal beaches are open too. Reese Park, for example, that is a federal beach, and that has never closed. When I went out to Breezy a couple of weeks ago, I did see that parking lot just packed, and that's because that's Donald Trump's beach, not the city's or the state's. Anyway, big guest list today, really good guest list. Our good buddy, New York City Councilman Joe Borelli, is going to stop by. He's done something spoke to him yesterday. He's going to come on with us after Piscopo. He did something very, very nice for families that should be taken care of. We'll talk to Joe Borelli. Your guy, Bernie, he wrote that story about Barack Obama last week. Dole Fisher going to stop
by. He's great. He's a columnist for the American Spectator. And the particular column that caught my eye was, and actually it was sent to me by our program director, it's called A Time to Hate. And then he went out to write some other columns like Blame Trump and Obama's Incompetence. I mean, this guy, he's a great writer, and he is pissed off.
Yeah, and actually, it's no surprise that Dave Labrosi, our program director, sent you that article because his cousin, who's been on this show twice, also writes for the American Spectator. And finally, former Washington Redskins Super Bowl MVP quarterback Joe Theismann. Now, Joe is a great quarterback in the National Football League, but since then has become a big-time entrepreneur, owns restaurants in Washington, D.C. You see Joe often on CNBC, Fox Business, and he's going to come on and talk about what this COVID has done to his economy. He's also a big Trump guy, so we'll talk to former Redskin quarterback Joe Theismann as well.
We got fun and games back here on the Bernie and Sid Show. Heard everyone in the 77 WABC app. It was a jungle again walking in here at 1:30 this morning. It really was. I mean, all these mutts out there, they throw them out of Penn Station and they set up camp on 31st Street, and it's very hairy, very hairy. I want to stab somebody.
Yeah.
I really do.
It's worse than now because nothing opens till 5. So I get here just after 5. That's the first train, so it's much quieter. It is funny, though, talking about the homeless and all that, that now they want you to wear a mask on the train. I took the train for 4 years when it was packed. It was filthy. It was disgusting. It was packed with homeless in there with tuberculosis, AIDS, you name it. And now the trains are very, very clean. I actually smell the cleaning solution every morning. I don't see a homeless person on my trains anymore. If there's one time you shouldn't have to wear a mask in my 4 years here in New York, it's actually now. Now is the safest time to ride the trains.
They made the announcement yesterday that they're going to use this UV light, not only in the trains that they're cleaning in the train yards overnight, but also in the subway stations and on some of the trains as well. They're going to use the UV light.
Yeah.
Which is, it's a good idea. It was derided a little bit early on when the HHS guy mentioned it, or whoever it was, one of the science guys from the HHS guy, DHS, HHS, whatever.
But here's the bottom line. The bottom line is if the trains are not that crowded, so you don't have to touch those poles, because we know those poles, the COVID will stay on there for 2 or 3 days on that surface. You don't got to touch it. Now, when you take the trains, you wear a pair of pants, go home and change or take a shower. But the truth is, you don't have to touch anything on the train, and there's less people, and they're cleaner, yeah, and no homeless. So, again, for the 100th time, why wear a mask now when for 4 years I took the train with all kinds of peril?
And let me just repeat, because I love it, which I asked Eric Adams yesterday. If masks work, why didn't they just give masks to the inmates in prison instead of releasing them? Which, right, leads me to this a quick stat I want to mention here, is that nearly 1 in 5 people suspected in shootings was out on supervised release because of the COVID BS. And so far, there have been 276 shooting incidents, with 19% suspected having been paroled in 2020 because of COVID. So, and it's, murders, 12% of murder suspects, same thing, released because of coronavirus. 12% of murder suspects. This is unbelievable. So, look, the president yesterday, he announced that he was going to, he's going to withdraw. He's not going to give back the money to this World Health Organization. It's a big deal. Michael Goodwin has a column on it. It's a huge deal, as a matter of fact. These guys were complicit. They have blood on their hands. They were parroting the Chinese line. This is the reason, folks, while we're in the predicament we're in, because of China and their lackeys at the World Health Organization. We give these guys $450 million a year. China gives them $40 million a year. For some reason, they do China's bidding. For some reason. I guess one is because the chief, this Tedros doofus, he's a flat-out Marxist is what he is. But anyway, this was Trump yesterday talking about, well, these guys got to shape up. We'll give them 30 days to shape up. And then maybe we'll rejoin the WHO and give them money.
They have to clean up their act. They have to do a better job. They have to be much more fair to other countries, including the United States, or we're not going to be involved with them anymore. We'll do it a separate way.
So China, when Trump accused China of making those accusations, they wrote in a headline yesterday, China hits back in words and aid pledges as America goes at it alone. And then Michael Goodwin, this is from Goodwin, that's a quote from China, the New York Times. Michael Goodwin writes back, see, China hits back means America started it. That's the implication. That's from the New York Times. They're taking China's side. I mean, back in after 9/11, the New York Times and Democrats, they didn't take Osama bin Laden and al-Qaeda's side. This time they are. It's unbelievable. And all the news outlets takes their cues from the New York Times, including this other punk in a pantsuit, Nancy Pelosi, who said this about what Trump is doing.
Let me just say that what the president is saying about China is interesting. It's an interesting diversion. Let's keep our focus on meeting the needs of the American people, opening our economy.
Yeah, that's right. We want to open our economy, and you guys want to slow roll it. So what the hell is talking out of both sides of your mouth? But it's a diversion to assign blame to where it belongs, which is the communist government of China, and no longer being suckers and no longer being dependent on them, all that stuff. It's all a diversion, folks. It's all a diversion. That's all it is. It's to distract from what? I don't know. From doing a great job, I guess.
Well, you wouldn't know it came from China if you listen to the governor every day, because he's now said it's come from Europe, it's come from God, and it's come from Mother Nature.
Anything but China. Even right. Even that's Obama. Right. Even Obama with his big mouth. No words about China. China is like, they can do no wrong. By the way, they committed to donating $2 billion to help fight combat coronavirus throughout the globe. Committed, they'll roll it out over the next 2 years. $2 billion, which is spit in the ocean. We just spent $3 trillion to try to get this this government and economy and everything, people paid and fighting the coronavirus. $3 trillion, they're committing $2 billion the world over. The world has been screwed by them. $2 billion, take it and shove it up your communist Chinese, you know what.
Whoa, hey now. 6:40. The hump day Wednesday morning, back on the Bernie and Sid in the Morning Show. Three great guests stopping by today. New York City Councilman Joe Borelli in the 7 o'clock hour. Terrific writer Dole Fisher coming up in the 8 o'clock hour. And former Washington Redskins Super Bowl MVP quarterback Joe Theismann coming up in the 9 o'clock hour. So again, three terrific guests. 1-800-848-WABC. That's the number, 1-800-848-9222. We'll grab some calls. And I do want to get to this guy, Ian Smith, because as I told you, we got friends in New Jersey, including Frank Catania, who owned gyms. And they were watching this guy down in Belmar very, very closely. And two guys actually said to me, two guys that own gyms here in Bergen County, northern New Jersey, if it goes well for him, they were going to do it too. They were going to defy and not comply and open the gyms. Both guys told me yesterday, no thanks. We'll get to those specifics coming up later, Bernard. Here's David in Windsor Terrace on line 6. Good morning, David.
Good morning, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
You got it.
Sure thing, boss.
If you guys recall, a few days after 9/11, Christine Todd Whitman of the EPA said the air quality down at World Trade Center was safe.
Remember that?
Yeah, we know how that played out, right?
Right. Now we have lawyers saying, hey, listen, call us, and we can sue for you. We can get you a lot of money because she was dead wrong, and I mean, pun intended.
Right.
Yeah, look at all the first responders.
Sadly.
Anyway, fast forward to today where, you know, Cuomo and de Blasio tell you, if you don't wear a mask, you're putting lives in danger.
Not true. Just not true. It's just not true. I mean, again, you know, if I'm asymptomatic, I'm pretty sure I had this back in January. I'm going to get tested at some point. But if I'm asymptomatic and I just happen to walk up right in front of your face, I mean, right in front of your face, and I cough and I sneeze and I fart to a whole bunch of things, there's a chance you may get it. I mean, come on. What are the odds of me stopping right in front of your nose, Bernard, and doing those types of things? I mean, even when you're walking past somebody quickly in the park or jogging past somebody.
Well, outside you have... You're 1,000% correct. I'm in total agreement with you. Inside, maybe not so much.
But why?
Because if you do, you can't, if you go inside the store, there's no way you can stay away from people 6 feet. There's no way you can do that.
Well, that's not true because the stores that I've been in, even the eateries, they have big circles that are exactly 6 feet apart. You must stand on that circle. They only allow one person at a time to walk to the register, where, by the way, every store I've been to has a huge partition. So, and I've been to stores and restaurants where, yes,
well, I'll give you an
practice
example.
Social distancing.
Right downstairs, the Duane Reade Drugstore. It's the only place I go. My wife, Carol, does all the shopping for us out there, and she wears her mask. I go downstairs with my funky getup, but I walk right past people. We walk right past each other. I walk past the security guard. I walk past other shoppers.
Well, but you walk
There's
past
no
them.
Distancing.
But you're not standing next to them. You
well,
walk
sometimes
past
I
them.
Stop in the aisle and I'm looking for what the hell I'm looking for. I mean, I could keep going, but there's no, you are passing people in close proximity. And now, look, it may, even in that case, the masks may not help. I don't know. I would say that chances are you're more likely to catch something in a confined space.
Well, that's probably true. You are more likely to catch it than catch it. Catch it. Be sick for 3 or 4 days. Build up your immune system. Get the antibodies, all that. And stay away from old people and people with conditions and vulnerable. Get the stupid thing already. Get sick for 3 days. Take your Tylenol. And it's all over. That's it. Done. I mean, what are you worried about?
I'm a proponent also of
if you get it, so what?
I'm a proponent of the herd immunity theory as well.
Well, it's a fact.
But look, if it means reopening, I mean, it's a small sacrifice. I'll say yes. Okay. We got to get this. The society's going to crumble. You don't want New York City turning into Detroit. Every day counts.
Well, it's going to be
that. So if that's going to be one of the restrictions.
Well, that's going to be the case.
Then we should do it instead of allowing these incompetent pieces of garbage turn this place, our beloved city, we used to love it anyway, into Detroit. We don't want that.
Listen, I don't disagree. I do the shopping with Danielle. Unlike you, I do go to about 3 or 4 stores almost daily, including Gristides. So I'm out there. I'm at these supermarkets. I'm telling you, for me, I want them to reopen. I agree with you. If it means you have to wear a mask, reopen. I'm not going to go to a restaurant and sit there and wear a mask. I'd rather eat at home like I've done the last 2 months. Now, the stuff I have to do, I'll do it, and I'll wear a mask. But I'm not going to go out for a night of entertainment for dinner with my family and sit in a place and wear a mask.
Oh, I don't think that isn't right now in the cards. That the only solution to restaurants right now, I believe, is al fresco. Where you can sit outside and not wear a mask.
No, that's true initially, but if there are restaurants that don't have outdoor sitting, they're going to allow you at some point, A, they're going to social distance the tables, they'll be at least 6 feet apart, and you're going to have to wear a mask, and the whole staff, the whole waiting staff, maitre d', they're all going to be wearing masks. Yeah, and to me, that's disconcerting. That's not fun.
It's not fun at all.
No.
It's stupid. It is stupid. And as far as wearing masks outdoors goes, I'll say this. I will make a totally just spontaneous prediction that somewhere down the line, I mentioned this to you a day or two ago, you're going to have people with respiratory problems. And they're going to say, you know why? Because we were wearing those masks while we exercised and we were inhaling carbon dioxide, our own carbon dioxide, while we exercised heavily. Outdoors, I believe that's a possibility. I mean, no doctor. I haven't consulted any doctor. I haven't read anything. But how could that not be the case?
I think it's a not a probability. It's a possibility, but it is a factual truth. It is a factual truth that you're breathing in your own carbon dioxide, and that's not healthy.
Plus, you're not getting enough oxygen.
No.
If you're exercising the way you used to, you're just not. When you exert yourself and you try to breathe with a mask on, you don't get the requisite amount of oxygen that you need. You just don't. I mean, just from experience, you just don't. I have to pull the damn thing off.
Here's Jeff Bernard. He's in Elmont, New York. He's on line one this morning. Good morning, Jeffrey.
Hi, guys. How you doing? Hey, no.
Good. Thank you, Jeff.
Good. I love you guys. I just wanted to ask you a question, as Curtis would say, about the dope from Park Slope. If he's so worried about the people going to the beach in New York City, how come he's not worried about them going to the beach in Long Island?
The inconsistencies, that's another one. That's a great one. Yeah, look, the bottom line is that he wasn't prepared to open the New York City beaches. In other words, he was incompetent. I said it earlier. I'll say it again. He was plain, flat-out incompetent. He did not prepare to pay lifeguards and train lifeguards. He just disregarded it. And all of a sudden, Memorial Day snuck up on him. And now he wants, he's indignant about the New York City residents not being able to go to some Long Island beaches. And again, I'll repeat it for anybody that's tuned in. You can go to Jones Beach. That's a state beach out on Long Island.
Reese Park, too, in Queens. That's a federal beach. I know you're talking about Long Island, though, specifically. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, you can go, but you can't to Long Beach. No, you can't go to Nickerson Beach, which Laura Curran said yesterday, which is the town of Hempstead Beach. You can't go to that whole strip along Long Beach. You just can't go to any of those places. Long Beach voted last night to say no, and it's all on de Blasio. And by the way, I would also say this to you folks out there. It's probably a moot conversation because it's going to be a fairly cool weekend. High in New York is going to be about 70 degrees each day. 70 degrees, that's the high.
Yeah, well, I think we're going to hit 75 on Saturday and 73 on Sunday, but you're right, not 80s and 90s.
But I'll tell you, at the ocean, though, it's usually at this time of year, the temperature lags about 10 degrees behind. So that means the high along the ocean is going to be around 60 degrees.
And the water is still very, very cold.
Freezing. Nobody wants to swim. Nobody swims in the water except crazy people.
Well, my
drunk,
son
drunk
did.
Crazy
my
people.
Son did last
and
week.
And kids. Kids will. Kids
right.
will go in.
Gabe did go in. But you're right. It's going to be 60-plus degrees. Now, look, don't kid yourself. You lay out there with a sweatshirt and a pair of shorts. You put your face in that sun on the beach in 63 degrees. You'll look like this.
If we have sun. I mean, I see I'm just going by my phone. I saw the 4 days. Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday, they showed high in when I was in Lido, Long Beach last night, highs of 62 and 60 with clouds.
Oh, you got that, really? See, here in the city, we've got 30% chance of rain on Friday and Saturday, but mostly a nice day, and Sunday and Monday, all sun. And highs in the low 70s, but I'll be on the beach too. So
well, listen, it could change as well. We were supposed to have rain from a hurricane yesterday and today. We did not. So anything can change.
Here's Jeff in Boca Raton talking about what place?
Place starts with a J.
Oh, J.A. Alexander's?
No, J.B.'s. I went to J.B.'s.
Oh,
on
J.B.'s on the beach in Deerfield. Yeah. I love that place.
Yeah, changed. But, yeah. Yeah, they valet the car, and then they wipe the steering wheel down when you leave. Only one hostess had a mask on. You got to have a mask when you walk in. And then the tables were separated, but there's nobody in there. And, the prices are still the same. Mm. But, and then when you leave, the valets are scrambling and wiping down the door handles and the steering wheel. It was just kind of uncomfortable.
See, that's what I'm saying. Like, so in their effort to make it, safe and clean and get people like you, Jeff, back in Deerfield or Boca Raton, back to the restaurants, all these things are doing, in my opinion, I'm not speaking for you, they're scary, they're disconcerting, they're not comfortable, it's not fun. So while I would love to go out and spend money at my local restaurants and help them get by, it just sounds like a miserable experience. I'd rather eat at home.
It does. It sounds very miserable. Look, I would just say at this point, yes them to death, and then break the rules. Just say yes, I'll show you, right. And then you show up and you take the dance. I think the owners will go along with that. I mean, how are they going to police that?
I don't know.
I mean, the people have spoken. The people have spoken. These emergency powers by our Constitution are granted to the governors for about a month. 28 days, I think, is the technical amount of time. That's it. That's all you have. Mm. And then it's over. Now you have to shut up and let the people do what they have, what they need to do.
We're going into 3 months here in New York, and de Blasio and Cuomo are doing anything but shutting up.
I know, exactly. Somebody, Kieran Lawler, would you please
somebody
file a lawsuit? Joe Borelli?
Coldplay. In My Place, 657 on your Wednesday morning. Joe Borelli coming up. That's going to be interesting because Borelli's out there pushing for this line of duty benefits. 277 folks that died of coronavirus. Their family's about to get some money. And for what it's worth, Bill de Blasio has backed the same thing. So my fear is that Joe Borelli, who along with Eric Ulrich and all these Republican guys that we love, they hate Bill de Blasio, but my fear is he's going to have to say something nice about the mayor today.
Well, I mean, yeah, obviously, line of duty pay for the frontline responders.
Right.
You got to go along with it. And de Blasio, really, what's he going to do, say no? After what is – he didn't fire this idiot
Dr.
Barbeau.
Yeah.
So, he's got to sign. And plus, giving away money – That comes naturally to Democrats.
You know, you say he didn't fire Barbeau. I keep saying this. I am less upset with him than I am with NYPD Chief Terrence Monaghan. And now a guy that I said from day one was no different than Jimmy O'Neill, which, of course, is the commissioner, Dermot Shea, who also forgave Dr. Barbeau yesterday for those comments.
It is
disgusting.
It really is.
Gross. Here's Steve, your neighborhood, Bernard, Boogie Down Bronx, online, too. Good morning, Steven.
Good morning, guys. Guys, this might sound silly, but even if they open the restaurant, I got no clothes. I can't even get a polo shirt nowhere. I need socks. I need underwear. I need everything. I can't even get nothing.
Well, not really. You live in the Bronx. It's okay.
My kids are 14 and 16. They need all new clothes. Nothing fits them from last year. You can't even go get nothing.
No, it's true. You got to go online and take your chances.
By the way, they're all you got JCPenney, Neiman Marcus filed for bankruptcy. Yes. Pier 1 just filed for bankruptcy.
Yeah, it's bad.
Look, they're not necessarily Pier 1 is going to close, but the others, not necessarily. It's not a death sentence like with Gold's Gym as well. Not a death sentence.
Not yet, right.
In other words, they'll close. They won't pay certain bills. But then they'll reopen.
Macy's also closed a ton of stores. Here's Chris in Greenwich, Bernard, on line 6. Good morning, Chris.
Yeah, good morning. How you doing? I'm on my way to work. I work for Con Ed, and I just wanted to tell you that there are adverse effects from wearing what they call respirators for long periods of time. Your heart is actually enlarged. And the other thing I wanted to say was that I think we, as the people of the United States, are really setting a bad precedent as far as allowing the powers that be to dictate to us what we have to do from now on going forward. And they're going to take advantage of the fact that we are listening and basically abiding by their rules, not laws at this point.
You ain't lying about that, Chris. But the part about the masks actually help, they enlarge your heart. Is that what you...
No, he said it hurt.
It hurts. Okay, yeah, good.
He's not for the mask, so...
All right. And yes, as far as, listening and being subservient little peasants to these tyrants, not a good precedent. He's right about that.
Yeah. Back here on the Bernie and Sid Show, heard everywhere on the 77 WABC app coming up this hour. City Councilman Joe Borelli, who we love. He's got a pair. We need more like him, folks. Anyway, he's coming up this hour. And next hour, we're going to speak to a guy named Dove Fisher. He writes for the American Spectator, but my God, what a great writer and what a passionate dude. You're going to love him. You're going to love this guy. Trust me when I tell you. He's going to take out some of these scumbags. Let me just borrow Maxine Waters' words. That's the kind of mentality he has, and I love it. And speaking of scumbags, this Senator Sherrod Brown, yesterday he's having a hearing. And, of course, the Treasury Secretary, Steve Mnuchin, is there. This guy's been breaking his butt, trying to help everybody. He's a brilliant guy. He's a little nerdy. But he really is a brilliant guy. You could tell he has the best of intentions. He really does. I really feel that. I don't know the guy from a hole in the wall, just from watching him over the past couple of months.
In any case, this is Sherrod Brown from Ohio questioning Steve Mnuchin. Just listen to how he frames the question.
How many workers should give their lives to increase our GDP by 0.5%? That you're pushing people back into the workplace. There's been no national program to provide worker safety. The president says reopen slaughterhouses. Nothing about slowing the line down. Nothing about getting protective equipment. Is how many workers should give their lives to increase the GDP or the Dow Jones?
Yeah, he said that already.
You know, workers should give their lives to do that, Mr. Senator, and I think your characterization is unfair. We have provided enormous amounts of equipment. We've worked with the governors. We've done a terrific job.
I mean, how do you deal with people like that?
Well, CNN's contention, their contention, what they're promoting this morning is right there, Sherrod Brown, fake news and very political.
Yeah.
CNN is saying this morning that President Trump and the White House, they are no longer operating with this virus, with science. It's all about politics. They are even, they've gone out of their way to say that Donald Trump is now recruiting doctors that will support his message of let's get back to work.
And they
so
also said
they're saying that the White House is politicizing it. Is it not the other way around?
They also said that there was Trump-Russia collusion for 3.5 years. No, they're fake news. I wouldn't pay attention to them. And then you have Governor Inslee from the state of Washington and Hillary Clinton. We had a caller before. This sets a bad precedent. We're listening to these totalitarian socialists. We're actually like mice. We're adhering to what they're saying. Not all of us. Like the guy with the gym down in South Jersey and a few others out there have quite the pair on them. Anyway, but listen to Inslee and Hillary Clinton both talking about how you exploit a crisis. Instead of focusing on reopening, we have to exploit this crisis, extend it, and use it to our advantage, political advantage. Listen.
And we should not be intimidated when people say, oh, you can't use this COVID crisis, you know, to peddle a solution to climate change. No, we have to recognize the necessity of this moment.
Every form of health care should continue to be available, including reproductive health care that eventually and quickly, I hope, gets us to universal health care. This would be a terrible crisis to waste, as the old saying goes.
Unbelievable. No, it's time to just reopen before we slip into a Great Depression. That is, forget about exploiting a crisis. Let's reopen this damn society before it just totally collapses. We're in danger of that right now. Time is of the essence. And these people want to play games. It is really, really, it's dangerous. It's not a game. It's dead serious.
But we are reopening. I mean, as of this weekend, all 50 states will be reopened in some fashion. You and I are particularly frustrated because we're in the, quote unquote, I'm sick of this word too, epicenter. Where, by the way, only 100 people died yesterday. I know, Sid, only 100. That's not a lot of people, folks. Bottom line is, it's not every life. Stop it.
105 to be exact.
Not a lot. So we're more frustrated than most, but in all fairness, all 50 states have reopened in some fashion
as of
Friday.
Not nearly fast enough, and a lot of them in minimal fashion as well.
Well, you say a lot of them. Isn't that the minority, though, honestly?
Yeah.
Most of them are actually open for real business, aren't they, most of them?
I don't think most of them.
I think we're in the minority here in New York.
I think you have Florida, you have Georgia, you have Texas, you have Wyoming, you have Montana, states like that. Ohio to some extent, but
Illinois?
No, Illinois, the exact opposite.
Bad as us?
Yeah.
What about states like Utah, Wyoming?
I mentioned
they're wide open.
Maybe, perhaps. The red states are definitely making a good faith effort to do it responsibly and do it the right way.
All I'm saying is for people out there, don't characterize the country by New York or New York City, because that's not really true.
And I will say about this particular state, every place is open up except the Mid-Hudson region, which is just north of us, New York City, and Long Island.
That's it. Seven of ten are now open. They opened the Capital region, which, of course, is Albany. But you're right. Hudson Valley, Long Island, and New York City, that's it. That's Hudson Valley, I guess, would be Kieran's territory.
Westchester County, Putnam County, Rockland County. Maybe Putnam as well. I don't know.
Yeah.
But whatever. Just north of the city. New Jersey says you can open garages today. Garages. Okay, great. That's it? Garages?
What do you mean, parking structures?
Places that fix cars.
Yes.
That type of thing. Connecticut reopens today. Restaurants, not salons, not gyms, but restaurants. In fact, Ned Lamont, He was crowing. Listen to him.
We're one of the few states in this region that never actually closed down manufacturing, never closed down outside construction, always kept our parks and beaches open. But we are on Wednesday going to have a an opening of sorts for some things that have previously closed. Outdoor dining, that's important. Main Street retail, they were only available for a pickup before. Now they'll be available for in-person as well.
All right, good. I like that.
See, I love it. Now, and you mentioned gyms and salons. They were supposed to open today with the rest of that stuff. They did put a bit of a delay on it, but yeah, they are planning on opening all of that stuff in the next 2 weeks.
But there goes Cuomo's regional approach, because Governor Lamont sees, apparently, he's not slow rolling this thing, as is Governor Cuomo with his stupid metrics, his unattainable goals in some cases. Now, look, Bill de Blasio was totally unprepared for Memorial Day, totally, completely caught flat-footed, screwing the residents of New York City, not reopening the beaches, didn't train any lifeguards, hire them, none of this crap. And so the onus is going to supposedly fall on the, well, the suburbs, mainly Long Island. That's not going to happen. This is what de Blasio said.
But they're going to put limits on the total number of people in their beaches. This should not be about any ill feeling towards people, depending on where they come from. This is about, there are real clear limits on the beaches that will be open, and everyone needs to respect that to keep us all healthy and safe in the entire metropolitan area.
Ill feeling? Well, what ill feeling? I mean, if they're limited to 50%, and they can barely get their own residents onto the beach,
yeah,
why should they take your residents because you screwed your own residents? I mean, ill feeling? You know, the Nassau County Commissioner, Laura Curran, she actually, I love this now. They're all Democrats, by the way. She's taking shots at him. She's calling de Blasio irresponsible and short-sighted, his policy. And she's right. Everybody hates this lazy-ass slob, Bill de Blasio. He screwed the people of New York big time with this Memorial Day thing. And it is gross. And again, it's not just Laura Curran, but well, let's listen to what she said.
I will sign legislation restricting access to Nickerson Beach to Nassau County residents only.
Yeah. But now keep in mind, folks, as I mentioned before,
Snubs.
Jones Beach is open. You can go to Jones Beach, but you cannot. You can go to Robert Moses. You can go to Jones Beach. You can't come to Long Beach. As a matter of fact, listen to Todd Kaminsky talking about, he lives two blocks down from me in where I live, but he's talking about Long Beach in particular. Listen.
It's a real problem out here. You know, we have to have our beaches at 50% capacity, but when you add this pressure of the city residents, it really creates a very difficult situation.
Yeah, and he's talking about de Blasio. Creates a very difficult situation, you stupid moron, you idiot, you incompetent piece of garbage. Bill, you lazy-ass slob, de Blasio, I cannot say it enough. Steve Ballone from Suffolk County, same thing.
I'm issuing an order for this Memorial Day weekend and indefinitely moving forward to make Suffolk County beaches resident only. We know that we have limited capacity.
So it's unanimous. It's unanimous.
Of course it is.
Everybody hates Bill de Blasio. Yeah. He was asleep at the switch, at the wheel. Totally. I mean, it's on the calendar. Did you have any aides to tell you what to do? I mean, you just snuck up on you. It just hit you on Monday that it was going to be Memorial Day weekend? Absolutely inexcusable. Governor Cuomo should exercise his power and get that guy the hell out.
It's not going to happen. Ever. New York City Councilman Joe Borelli coming up at 7:40.
Would agree that you would like that, right?
Who wouldn't like it? Like you said,
the answer is yes. Okay,
there's partisan
ahead.
Hatred.
Joe Borelli what?
There's partisan hatred for this guy.
Yeah, it's bipartisan hatred.
Bipartisan, excuse me. No, there's partisan hatred. and bipartisan, you're right.
Yeah, he's damn right.
But he's not going to fire him. So, I mean, we do, you know, we can ask him every single day, and it sounds great, but it's not going
to
happen.
Well, thank you. Thank you for allowing me to ask him. I'm asking him. Hey, Governor Cuomo, fire his ass.
Okay. Okay, let's see what happens.
The boy had a chance with someone like you. Are you gonna break his heart? Let him cry for the moon. Are you hiding somewhere behind those eyes?
7:27. Hump Day Wednesday morning. Joe Borelli's coming up next, the great New York City councilman. Then writer Doe Fisher in the 8 o'clock hour. And former Washington Redskins Super Bowl MVP quarterback Joe Theismann coming up in the 9 o'clock hour. So you got three great guests stopping by today. I did like Bill O'Reilly's piece there, talking about some of our major universities getting back to work. He spoke specifically about the Fighting Irish of Notre Dame. I don't think he went there. I think he went to Marist, actually, and Boston University in Marist. But he talked about Notre Dame and Purdue, two schools both out of the state of Indiana. Talked about kids going back on August the 10th, which is good. They will go to school up until Thanksgiving. There'll be no breaks, no fall break, where you go home for Thanksgiving and come back till Christmas. So I guess they'll kind of jam it all in between August and Thanksgiving to get it done. I think NYU is actually coming back, too. Is that right, Meany? Did NYU actually say yes?
They said that they will be returning to in-person classes in the fall.
In the fall. So NYU here in New York City will have in-person classes in the fall. Now, they must practice social distancing. The students will be wearing masks, I guess. But it looks like at least at some of these major universities, including one here in New York, it may be business as usual in September. Now you want in August, I should say, or September. Now you hope that certainly high schools and junior high schools and elementary schools follow the same path, and our kids are not at home remote learning in September, as Bill de Blasio has intimated, and that idiot Carranza over the last couple of weeks. We will see. Let's take one quick call, go to break for Joe Borelli, and let's go to Mike in New Jersey online, too. Good morning, Michael.
Hey, good morning. I don't want to throw too many stones here, but maybe people actually begin to think about who they're voting for. I mean, we got our own problems with Murphy, but you know, you guys got de Blasio, which is as bad as it gets. And maybe people will start thinking before they pull a lever.
Listen, it's important. You're right. I mean, obviously, the equal to Murphy, your governor, is Cuomo. He's our governor. De Blasio is a mayor. And you've got plenty of those in the state of New Jersey. But you're right. You make a poor decision, the wrong vote, and you got to live with it for many, many years. And we are starting to see just how bad some of their decisions are, ruining this city and ruining this state.
In the cold light of day, we're a flame in the wind, not the fire that we be.
We are back here on the Bernie and Sid Show, heard everywhere in the 77 WABC app, and we love our next guest here. We really do. God, if there were only more like him in government in New York City and New York State. In any case, City Councilman from Staten Island, Joe Borelli, Joseph Borelli, is on the line with us right now. Good morning to you, Joe.
Top of the morning, fellas. Great to hear your lovely voices in the morning.
Always a pleasure.
Oh, you say that to all the guys.
I do.
So listen, tell us, this is the latest thing you're doing. It has you, and inexplicably enough, you're in agreement with Bolshevik Bill de Blasio, which is something he had to back, I mean. But what you're doing is God's work. It's a great thing. Tell us about this, the line of duty benefits for city workers who have died from the coronavirus.
Look, it's like, once a millennium when the Mayan calendar aligns or something like that. Every once in a while, Bill de Blasio is right on the issue. Full stop, no qualifiers. Bill de Blasio did the right thing yesterday because his announcement means that the city will now incur the payments to pay line-of-duty workers' death benefits and keep their families on health care, and pay the pension that these poor fellows and ladies actually earned working for the city of New York. That'll all go to the families. It's a good thing. The state legislature has to officially authorize it and make it happen. But this was the biggest roadblock, with the city saying we won't pay for it.
Wow.
So it's a good thing. Full stop. No qualifier about de Blasio. He did the right thing here, period.
Have you actually spoken to Mayor de Blasio throughout this process?
I spoke to him once, but I speak to his very often, one of his right-hand gal, a woman named Emma Wolf, who I'll give a shout-out to. You'll find a lot of praise for her on every side of the aisle, and she's a hard worker, and she did well here.
So, well, I will say this. Mayor de Blasio, and of course, is that dumb health commissioner of his, who I believe you have called in the past to resign. They were in a bit of a box, in a bit of a bind. It came to light, of course, that they said some horrible things about the NYPD. She did in particular, and he knew about it, and yet she still has her job. And to some extent, that plays a part in his sort of apologizing and going along with this line of duty. But you're right, full stop, he did the right thing. But I think that is an element to be considered in his decision-making.
Well, look, nothing's in a vacuum, right? He was facing some bad press. I think this is totally my summation and my estimation, but I'm willing to bet that this health commissioner might have some dirt on Bill de Blasio. Not shady dirt,
yeah.
But I'm willing to bet that she was probably telling him earlier on to shut things down, to close the schools, and he was saying, no, we're going to go with the keep everything open line for a while.
Interesting.
This is the scuttlebutt I'm hearing. Maybe it's making news right now. But that's what I've heard.
Well, that explains Bill de Blasio, Joe Borelli, our dear friend, the great Joe Borelli. How do you explain NYPD Chief Terrence Monaghan and Commissioner DeMarche? Is it as simple as they work for Bill de Blasio because they've forgiven her as well and seemingly have moved on from something that really should have been an upper termination?
Look, I can tell you right now, the members haven't forgiven her. The members are not going to let it go. The members are not going to have this improve their idea of Bill de Blasio as a mayor who supports law enforcement. And I think the damage, I mean, the reality is the damage between Bill de Blasio and the NYPD is already done, to where whoever he gets to run the agency, it doesn't matter. He's lost the respect. He's lost the will to work. By so many of the members of the department that it's almost a moot point to even worry about how they're responding.
Now, where do we go from here, Joe Burley? There's so much. It's Cuomo, de Blasio, and the beaches. Let me start with Governor Cuomo and his criteria for opening. Apparently, Northern New York, they're going to reopen. But some of these criteria that he has put out, I mean, with the seven steps and the contact tracers, a lot of it seems unattainable in some cases. But the point is this, that this city, every single day, this city is dying. And it may, at one point, we're going to reach the point of no return if we don't get it reopened.
Well, we've reached the point of no return if we don't get a federal bailout. Let's be clear about that. It's done. If we don't get a federal bailout, there'll be massive layoffs, massive service cuts, meaning not just the sprinkles, but the actual cake itself. So we do need some help from the federal government.
Did you have a dollar figure? I know Cuomo's asked for upwards of $61 billion. Do you know a dollar figure that would help save the day?
The city of New York needs about $7 billion. We can make up some of that on our own, but we need about $3, $4, maybe $5 billion, depending on how long this lockdown goes, which is the real cause of all the problem, right? Government is the 8.75% partner on every transaction that happens in the city of New York. And if there's no transactions happening, there's no money going in our piggy banks.
Exactly.
And that's the reality. You can be a progressive. You could think that the big social safety welfare net we provide as a city is the greatest thing on earth. If businesses aren't selling things to people and people ain't buying them, we're not going to have money to pay for that. And you just don't see the urgency from Bill de Blasio and Governor Cuomo. Now, the Cuomo administration has these, as you mentioned, the seven signs of the apocalypse to come back to life. A couple of them make sense. The rate of infections, the rate of death, right? It makes sense.
Yes, of course.
But some of these things, the hospital beds, we have to have 30% of our ICU hospital beds available. No one ever asked why. Why do we need that? We're talking about 90 beds from where we are now to where we have to be. So the governor's going to tell us that 90 beds that we don't need, no one's knocking on the door to try to get in them. 90 beds is going to keep more families going bankrupt, more families on unemployment, more businesses going through their savings. That's worth it when we don't need the beds. This is why business owners and the public are just so fed up at the lack of urgency on reopening. And it's a shame, and it's going to hurt us for a long time.
No doubt, Councilman Joe Borelli. So we're always asking our guests, especially the smart ones like you, what's the motivation? Bill O'Reilly talks about Andrew Cuomo having this dream, if not a reality, to run for president one day. So he's got to kind of keep the base of progressives happy, do what they want him to do.
And the attention.
And the attention he loves, being on television every single day. He certainly loves that. And so we know some of the motivations why. But if you had to pinpoint Joe Borelli, why Andrew Cuomo is doing something that is clearly, clearly killing his state and the city of New York, what is it?
It's power. For Andrew Cuomo, it's raw power. Andrew Cuomo and Bill de Blasio are very different human beings. Bill de Blasio is much more careless and carefree. Bill de Blasio, for example, if you get on the wrong side of Bill de Blasio, it doesn't even matter. It helps you. You can go in the paper. You can bash him. Democrats do this. Republicans do this. No price to pay. when you cross Andrew Cuomo in public life, you'll feel it. He'll make sure he gets some revenge on you at some point in the future. And I think that's just the sign that Andrew Cuomo is chasing the one thing that he wants is more power. And that's essentially the lockdown is the state legislature giving the governor almost every power the state of New York has.
Yeah, this city, Joe Borelli, city councilman from Staten Island, this city is devolving into Detroit fast. I mean, again, it's going to be irrevocable. I mean, it's going to be too late at some point to have the city recover with these guys slow rolling. And this guy de Blasio, I mean, first of all, Cuomo released state prisoners as well. But de Blasio released all these inmates from Rikers. You have these stats, the parolees with the recidivism, with the shootings and the burglaries and all that stuff. A high percentage of them committing these crimes. And so de Blasio has that on his hands. And also his unpreparedness for Memorial Day, when everybody else around him, New Jersey, Long Island, everybody was prepared to open the beaches. But this clown, this mutt, it just all of a sudden dawned on him on Monday that Friday is the beginning of Memorial Day weekend.
Well, this is the sign of someone who's not very good at leading. I mean, you know, all it would have taken for Bill de Blasio to open the beaches on Memorial Day would have been to train the lifeguards that we were eventually going to use at some point in the summer. Nobody was saying that the entire summer beaches were going to be closed. So the city should have been preparing its lifeguards, preparing its beaches to be opening. I'm sure it does take some time. I'm sure people have to do something down at the beach. But he failed to do this. And now it's just, it's almost comedy to see him bashing the county executive of Nassau, the county executive of Suffolk County, for not allowing New Yorkers to be on their beaches, when his own just failures are what's causing New Yorkers to not be on our own beaches. I think you're going to see this play out beyond beaches, by the way. As other regions open up, as other states open up, you're going to see New Yorkers flee. We've already been to Jersey last weekend, my wife and I. We went hiking with our friends. We went out. We went to the great Garden State, had a great time. You're going to see that happening on a massive scale from New York City, where everyone who has the means is going to leave.
It is just an awful situation. I know it's never going to happen. I wish if, I mean, Dictator Cuomo could just remove Bill de Blasio. I believe he has that power. I know it's never going to happen, but somebody, this guy is such a disaster. I mean, it's unfathomable. But listen, Joe Borelli, you did a great thing for these line of duty
great thing.
Benefits for the city workers, and we applaud you for that and your words as well. Keep up the good fight. We thank you for appearing on the Bernie and Sid Show, and Godspeed.
Fellas, I love joining you in the morning, so you guys have a great rest of the week and enjoy the weekend, and hopefully we can go have a beer in an actual place with a bar in front of us.
Yeah.
And someone will take our $10 for our Manhattan price beer at some point. I just can't wait to see that happen.
I know, right? You don't even mind spending $13, $14 for it, but hey, you're great. We love you, and you know, we think that you're a star, and we're hoping that over the next couple of years you shine even brighter. So thank you, Joe Borelli. Great job.
Thanks, fellas.
Horse with no name. Horse racing, big part of today's Bernie and Sid Show.
This reminds me, by the way, and a lot of people will know this, a Breaking Bad episode.
Oh, is that right?
Where Walter White is driving down the desert highway, and he's listening to this song. That's how the show opens, and it's one of the better episodes.
Okay, there you have it. America's Horse with No Name. That, of course, one of the greatest shows of all time. And horse, again, a big story today is what's going on here in New York with the Belmont. The Belmont, of course, if you folks don't know, is a wildly attended sporting event in New York every year in June. It is the third leg of the Triple Crown. Kentucky Derby, of course, in Kentucky in May. You get the Preakness at Pimlico later on in May. And then the Belmont is the third and final leg of the Triple Crown in June. And most years, we will get up to 120,000 people enjoying that event, especially 2 years ago when Justify actually won the Triple Crown. When you have a horse that wins the first two legs, Bunny, the Kentucky Derby and the Preakness, and has a chance to make history and win the Triple Crown, that even makes the Belmont even more popular, even more exciting.
Yeah, it's huge. It's a huge event. A lot of people go. I mean, I wouldn't go at gunpoint because of the traffic and just the crowds, just whatever. And it could be a hot day. You could have a shower and you're stuck, whatever. But people love it. I know people who go and love it. I will say this. I know there's going to be no crowds this year.
No.
And people are bemoaning that fact. I'd say look at the bright side. I mean, the way this was going, we were thinking food shortages. We were thinking all kinds of shortages,
right,
drug shortages.
Right. True.
I mean, it could have gone the way that we would have to be actually slaughtering and eating the horses.
True.
At this point.
No, it's true.
Instead, they're racing.
Right.
So that's a good sign.
You can look at it that way. They are racing. They actually cut the ordinarily it's a mile and a half, the last leg, but because it's the first leg this year, they've cut the race to 1 mile and 1/8. The Kentucky Derby, just so you know, will take place in September. That becomes the second leg. And the Preakness, which is usually the second leg, that becomes the third leg in October. Confused?
No, but speaking of the third leg, I mean, back to my original sentiment, that could have been, you know, we could have been eating Mr. Ed for dinner at
this
point.
No, you're right. You're right.
But thank God we haven't turned into North Korea.
You don't want to look a gift horse in the mouth. See what I did there? We found a horse. We did it again. And Andrew Cuomo was talking about sporting events with no fans, which Bernie just mentioned. There'll be no fans at the Belmont. Andrew Cuomo has been very, very steady the last couple of days. He wants basketball back. He wants hockey back. He wants baseball back. Yeah. He wants his Buffalo Bills back.
He gives lip service to it. Well, let's get it back.
Well, let's get it. He says New York is going to be a partner and help out, but he makes it very, very clear. No fans. Here's the governor just yesterday.
When a team plays, even if there's no one in the stands, it gets broadcast, and that gives people at home entertainment value, something to participate in, another reason, frankly, to stay home as opposed to go out, and staying home is good right now. I encourage the sports teams, and again, New York will be a full partner. Anything we can do to make it happen and make it happen safely, we will.
There you go. A full partner. What does that mean?
I think he likes to hear himself talk. You know, we're going to broadcast the sports on TV. That gives people a good morale. They like to see the sports. Tell us something we don't know,
right?
Yeah, we want to see sports on TV. We want to see people back in the stands as well.
But he has nothing to do with it.
I know.
It's all up to the commissioners of the specific sports.
It's just blah, 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 blah.
It's very, it's very nice that he'd like to see the Mets in Queens and the Yankees in the Bronx, but that's up to the commissioner of Major League Baseball, Rob Manfred.
And we're dying. The place is dying. Forget about, like Joe Borelli said, 19 beds separates us from reopening the city. For God's sakes, let's just be done with that.
And
Let's get 19 more beds.
Right, and the truth is, while we're both sports fans, I'm a rabid sports fan, I'm okay not seeing sports until next year. You're not. We've been over all that. But the truth is, I think we would both agree that if there's no basketball this year, LeBron James, he's going to be okay. He's going to be all right. Don't worry. Okay. If there's no hockey this year, Sidney Crosby, he's going to be okay. He'll be all right. If there's no baseball this year, Mike Trout, he's going to be okay.
Yeah, yeah.
So just to put everything in its proper perspective, even the most rabid of sports fans like myself, I'm not worried about these guys. I'm worried about that little store on the corner of 32nd and 7th, that poor bastard who can't pay his rent, can't pay his bills, you know, has to worry about paying his kids' medication.
Right.
That's the guy that I'm worried about.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, no, listen, you already heard some of these selfish bastards like Bryce Harper. He's not going to play. You know, he's I don't need, he's got so much money. He doesn't need the aggravation.
Well, he just got
a year off.
He just got a $300,000 contract last year from the Washington Nationals.
What about the people that you're talking about?
Excuse me, what'd I say?
$300,000.
$300 million, excuse me.
Right.
It's like Babe Ruth money, $300,000.
I mean, just unbelievable. $300 million, and he should just, shut his mouth. But listen, you did mention earlier, talking about Andrew Cuomo. We're tired of Bill de Blasio. We're tired of him, the beaches, not being prepared for Memorial Day.
Just talk. Nothing. And nothing's happening.
True. And you'd love to see Cuomo fire Bill de Blasio. Well, that's come up in the past. I told you that. And I had Meany actually go find this. Back during the blackout last summer, there was a lot of talk about how Bill de Blasio really fumbled the football there, talking about sports. And a lot of folks did actually go to Cuomo and say, when are you going to get rid of this guy? So just so you know, that question has been posed to Andrew Cuomo before. Just last year, 2019. Here's what your governor had to say.
I'm not prepared to do that. I understand their point. When the mayor said he was running for president, I think that's when the issue was really joined.
If the people of the city of New York conclude that the mayor cannot both run for president and be mayor, then they will make their voice heard.
Well, he wants the people to make that decision.
Yeah, yeah. Well, excuse me. Right now we're in an emergency, and this guy has proven to be not only incompetent and feckless and all those things, but actually an obstacle to reopening. The fact that the beaches, he's not prepared with lifeguards for beaches on Memorial Day weekend. I mean, this is exponentially worse than when Cuomo made those remarks a year ago. Now is the time to get rid of this. Put anybody else in it. Put Eric Adams in there right now. Put anybody.
I'd be fine
with
that.
Not Jermoni Williams.
No.
I mean,
no.
But we don't want some radical crazy in there.
Right.
But put somebody get rid of him. He's no good. He's got no answers. He's completely and totally, he's lazy and he's incompetent. He doesn't know what he's doing.
And like you said, he was not prepared for Memorial Day weekend, so he's not going to open the beaches, but yet he found a way to take Long Island to task.
Let Giuliani put...
I don't think what he wants to do. but that'll be great.
Somebody.
Listen, let Joe Borelli do it. Let Eric Ulrich do it.
Call Andrew Yang. Would you mind taking over here for an emergency situation for the duration of this administration?
I would take any one of those folks. So would every other New Yorker. But again, he does have the power to do it. It just seems improbable, highly unlikely that he will.
So bad that this is the leader we have.
I think Cuomo likes de Blasio in that seat because he makes him look better. I swear to God. No, I swear to God. I mean, as bad as Cuomo is, you know, if you ask any New Yorker who's a worse politician, even with the 6,000 elderly dead, they're going to say Bill de Blasio. And I think Andrew Cuomo kind of likes that. Now, de Blasio talking about the beaches and not allowing folks like me who live in New York City to go to Nassau County, spend time on the beaches, that made the mayor very, very angry yesterday. Here's de Blasio talking about Long Island, you snobs, not allowing people from the city on your beaches.
But they're going to put limits on the total number of people in their beaches. This should not be about any ill feeling towards people, depending on where they come from. This is about there are real clear limits on the beaches that will be open, and everyone needs to respect that to keep us all healthy and safe in the entire metropolitan area.
You effing fool. You damn moron. You stupid bastard. Excuse my language.
This guy's a moron.
I mean, these beaches, by the way, by Cuomo's edict, the beaches out in Long Island can only accommodate 50% of normal capacity. So they got a problem already. Even just with the people who live in Nassau County and Suffolk County. By the way, Jones Beach is open. You can go to Jones Beach and go to Fire Island. Those places are open.
Robert Moses as well.
Right. Robert Moses, which is technically is on Fire Island. You're right. Robert Moses Park, which you can drive to. Fire Island, you got to take a ferry to. But they're on the same island. Whatever. You can go there. But the other places, I mean, even Laura Curran, she's a Democrat out in Nassau County. She said this guy is, she called him names. He's incompetent, ineffective. What did she say? This is what she said. He's irresponsible and short-sighted, talking about Bill de Blasio. No, these local beaches like Long Beach, they can't accommodate people from New York City without shutting down the beaches. It would be too crowded because of the 50% limit that they have. Because de Blasio, I mean, this guy, he's pointing fingers at the suburbs when he was unprepared to open his own beaches. Everybody else around us in New Jersey, Long Island, Connecticut, beaches are open. New York City, not open. Cuomo, fire his ass.
I believe in miracles. Where you from? You sexy thing, you. I believe in miracles.
When he came along.
You sexy
back here on the Bernie and Sid Show, and everywhere on the 77 WABC app. Now, this whole, the president taking hydroxychloroquine issue, of course, was all the rage yesterday on TV. All the rage. As a matter of fact, the fake news people are now saying that the president's lying. That's their new line. First, it was, how dare he take it? It's dangerous. He's going to kill himself. This is awful. He's the leader of the free world. And now they're saying that, well, take a listen to what they're saying.
This is one of those things that I think is going to cause a lot of confusion in people.
I'm not sure that
we can take it to the bank that he's actually been taking this drug because he says he's been taking it. He's told 18,000 lies and counting.
I think there's a high probability that he's really not taking the drug. And I think you would need to have some real evidence to suggest that this is not just another tall tale of his.
Who knows if it's true? He may not have been taking it for all we know. He just likes to make a splash. And I want to make a comment on that,
Steve.
Go
ahead, Schmuck.
What the president did with hydroxychloroquine was reckless.
Let me assure you, the president of the United States is not taking hydroxychloroquine.
Yeah. He has, in fact, become himself a personal public health hazard to the citizens of this country.
They're full of crap.
You know, the second to last one was Morning Schmuck, Joe Scarborough. He of the skunk and the skank.
The dead intern in his Florida office.
Right. She's not taking hydroxychloroquine.
The dead intern?
Right. Exactly.
No, not now. No, because
exactly,
she's dead, Bern.
That's
she's
what
dead.
I was going to point out.
Yeah. And President Trump wants us to reopen that case. So.
Yes, he does. And, of course, you had the this old lady, Pelosi, the old bag with all the work on her and the false teeth and all that nonsense. And she talks like she's drunk. She says she's like, she's as bad as Biden, really.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
No,
the president
worse.
Is morbidly obese.
Well, the president, of course, hit back yesterday. Listen to him.
I don't respond to her. I think she's a waste of time. These people are sick. Pelosi is a sick woman. She's got a lot of problems, a lot of mental problems. We're dealing with people that have to get their act together for the good of the country.
He's so right. These people are mentally ill. Of course, we know about the TDS. It's a real thing, and she's got it. But not only that,
it's funny you say that.
She's half senile, too.
She is senile, but you mentioned TDS. So I tweeted on Sunday, I said, with all the talk of vaccines, and I sent it directly to Dr. Oz and Dr. Nicole Sapphire. I said, with all this coronavirus talk and all the vaccine talk, no one's talking about a vaccine for TDS. And I'll tell you something funny. Sapphire got back to me on Twitter and said, quote, it's a real thing. A legitimate doctor, Nicole Sapphire, yeah. When I mentioned TDS, she said, and I quote,
I believe it.
It's a real thing. Listen,
it's on display every day. You just heard that montage. These people are nuts. They're out of their mind. As a matter of fact, let's go to this ugly woman, really uglier on the inside than she is on the outside, and that's saying a lot. Her name is Joy Behar, and she had this really polite congressman. He agreed to go into their den, the magpie den, for some reason. The Angry Magpie TDS Den, and he talks to Joey Behar about his experience with hydroxychloroquine, and this is the way she treats him. Listen.
Did you just say that you took the hydroxychloroquine? My sound is a little weird.
Yes, I took it.
Wow.
Yep.
I can't believe anybody with a brain would take that stuff, but you seem like an intelligent guy. You're a representative in Congress. Yeah. Why would you take that drug? There are terrible consequences.
Yeah, I appreciate that's your view. That's not my view.
The ignorance, the lack of...
What are the terrible consequences?
The lack of the scientific knowledge is...
See, if I'm him, I would say, well, listen, why don't you tell me what some of those quote-unquote terrible consequences are, and then she would fump for her and humiliate herself. He didn't do that. He took the high road, but that's what I would have done.
Yeah. I would have called her a dumb biznitch.
Yeah. Yeah, tell me what those terrible consequences are, dummy.
What are they?
Tell me.
I mean, there's studies all over the place, and the people have been taking it for 65 years... For malaria, loop, everybody knows.
Arthritis.
Everybody knows. They've been taking it, and, you know, unless you have serious heart problems.
You don't die from it.
You're okay.
Unless you drink it as part of your fish tank fluid. That moron.
Yeah.
He deserved to die, that guy, to be honest. Well, but his wife killed him anyway.
It turns out that was fake news.
I know.
It was the wife killed him, yes.
Right.
The wife
right.
put the, whatever the crap was, the fish tank cleaner in one of his drinks.
Like they do with arsenic and antifreeze, so she killed
him. Like what's going to happen with you one day, when you're going to be like, this tastes good, Danielle.
It hasn't happened yet, so
no.
I'm a little surprised, but it could happen. You're right.
It could happen.
I could easily be in the AD channel in a couple of years.
Yeah, but this thing is just getting out of hand. And let's see here. Trump defended himself, and he said the right thing. Listen to this one.
Hydroxychloroquine is used by thousands and thousands of frontline workers so that hopefully they don't catch this horrible disease or whatever you want to call it.
That's a fact.
You know what Trump wins the battle here? Every person that you play, Bernie, or the audio that you play, people who are critical of hydroxychloroquine, can't say it. He says it perfectly, Donald Trump. So he's talked about it. He's done his homework. He says it perfectly. Think of all the folks we played on this show that are critical of that specific medicine, they can't say it.
Yeah.
They can't even say hydroxychloroquine. They can't say it.
No, exactly. You heard both Joy Behar and Schmuck Schumer.
Remember Biden?
Biden with his President Tweety. You know what? Let's play this clip. This is something that Matt, the geese. He was doing his podcast from his home with the geese and calling, he really stuck it to the president, calling him President Tweety. Woo-wee.
Aye.
Wow. Corn Pop was a bad dude.
Yeah, wasn't it?
Come on, man.
So Nancy Pelosi, of course, endorsed. And I said that they're both senile, the blind leading the blind. Matt Meaney put together a montage, just an amusing montage of her endorsing him and some of the things he said. And it's very entertaining. Great work, Matt. Listen, play it.
Today, I am proud to endorse Joe Biden for President of the United States.
We hold these truths to be self-evident. All men and women created by the thing.
And as we face coronavirus, Joe has been a voice of reason and resilience with a clear path to lead us out of this crisis.
If you agree with me, go to Joe 30330.
We need a forward-looking, battle-tested leader who will fight for the people.
We choose truth over facts.
A president with the values, experience, and the strategic thinking to bring our nation together.
Play the radio. Make sure the television, make sure you have the record player on at night. The phone. Make sure the kids hear words.
We're looking at each other like, what the hell is this?
That's a great montage.
Yes.
And as great as that is, another brilliant piece of work by Matt Meaney, that doesn't even cover one hundredth of it.
So
it's every day.
I got hairy legs.
That one?
Yeah, oh, yeah. The kids are sitting on my lap. It just doesn't end. And, of course, the... even our next guest.
Don't forget Four Finger Joe.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Our next guest, Dove Fisher, yes, from the American Spectator, he writes about Biden and his, the creepy behavior with the hair smelling and all that stuff. And, he's senile, et cetera, et cetera. We're going to talk to this guy, Dove Fisher. He's all over it. His column that caught my eye was called A Time to Hate. And he's wrote a couple of columns since then, which was spot on. He's a great writer, folks. And you're going to love him. Dove Fisher from the American Spectator coming up.
Shake it out.
Back here on the Bernie and Sid Show, heard everywhere on the 77 WABC app.
Haters gonna hate, Bern.
I'm telling you, man, and they've been hating in a big way, and that's a perfect introduction to our next guest. This guy's not a hateful guy. In fact, he's actually a rabbi. He's a lawyer, but above all, he's a great writer. His name is Dove Fisher. He writes for the American Spectator, and our program director, Dave Labrosi, sent me this article from the American Spectator that Dove Fisher wrote. It's called A Time to Hate. And it was so well written and laid out so beautifully. He begins by quoting the Hebrew Bible. A time to rend, a time to sow, a time to keep silence, a time to speak, a time to love, and a time to hate.
Yes,
and
from
so
the Torah.
He quotes that, and then he goes on, he lays out the case for what he hates about this political atmosphere that we find ourselves in, which is absolutely abysmal and ugly, and it's really reared its ugliest head during the pandemic. But let me bring in the author here, Dove Fisher. Good morning to you, Mr. Fisher, and thank you for appearing on the show.
Hi, thanks so much for having me. And
nice
I've been waiting so long. I'm based in California, and I've been waiting so long to finally talk to someone whose English I understand. I'm a Brooklyn boy.
Oh, is that right?
Very nice.
Okay, well, let's go. Well, welcome home. You're home, WABC. The tri-state is listening, Mr. Fisher, Dove, I'll call you Dove. And look, this time to hate thing, the way you laid it out, as I said, you start out with quoting the Hebrew Bible, and you go on, and then you list the things you hate. But lay it out for us, nice and slowly, the way you did in the article, because it's beautiful the way you reach a crescendo. I love it. Tell us about it, please.
Thanks very much. We have a constitution, and it has rules. And under those rules, Obama became president of the United States. I didn't like it from day one, but I accepted it because this is America and we have rules. And since the Republicans could not put up a candidate who was worthy of being president of the United States, a candidate who really reflected the conservatism of the American Republican rank and file, but instead put up two guys that weren't right for the time. They were the right people at the wrong time and the wrong people at the right time. We ended up with Obama. Yeah. So I accepted Obama, and it meant 8 terrible years in this country while our economy that had nowhere lower to go magically through his magic wand ended up going sideways.
That's a good line.
The economy never moved.
Yep.
On foreign affairs, he took ISIS, a little junior varsity, and watched it become a caliphate. He sent $1.7 billion to the Iranians, $400 million in secret cash packets from pallets from Eastern, from Europe, European money. And in fact, nobody ever heard the word pallet until he sent $400 million worth of that to the Iranians. But we put up with it. He was the elected president, and it meant that that's the way it goes. Sometimes you win, sometimes you lose.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a New York Mets fan. I was with them in 1962, and I knew what it meant to go through 8 years of disaster.
I mean, a lot of losing there. That's a lot of losing.
A lot of losing until we finally had a year with Kuzman and Seaver and Ryan. And then when the Mets won in 69, the rest of the American and National League accepted, okay, fair and square, they won. Now we have to let them have their day. And that begins what I hate. That after being a good sport, after so many of us were good sports for 8 years, and we put up with watching him attempt to destroy the oil industry and to attempt to destroy just about anything he touched Obama, it became destroyed. Finally, Trump was elected fair and square. And now it was time to accept that there's been a changing of the guard, and the other guys get a chance to see what their ideology will lead to. And I hate that we were not given, and particularly Trump was not given, a single day's presidency, not one day's honeymoon before he even came in. On the one hand, the media already were concocting stories and lies about him taking Martin Luther King busts out of the White House. And at the same time, we now know that there were people plotting within the Department of Justice, the FBI, to destroy this president and his entire team before he even came in.
There's on the fourth page of this column that you wrote, of the six-page column, Dove, this is brilliant. You talk about how you've come deeply to hate. You say, and I quote it, "I hate that Donald Trump never was given a chance to be president of the United States for even one day's honeymoon. I hate that long before he won the presidency fair and square, corrupt crooks and criminals in the United States Department of Justice, its FBI, were actively plotting to take him down. I hate that there are so few outlets in the media that give voice to condemn the criminality and corruption that broke every accepted societal norm by which we play the game. I hate that Obama was in on it, yet continues to pontificate on what is just and on what threatens freedom." You hate that Obama was in on it. The left says that's a joke, that's a conspiracy theory. We're convinced that's true. I guess so are you.
Absolutely so. And not only that he was in on it, but I hate the idea that no one has ever been called to justice on any of this stuff. You know, for the last 3 years, I watch people get on TV. They go into, let's say, Sean Hannity, and they sit and they give, for 5 minutes, they boast the way I've seen some rabbis go at synagogue sermons talking about what they're going to tell Arafat if they ever get to see him to his face. But where's the courage when it actually comes to doing something? So I watch Sean Hannity as everyone from Paul Ryan to Reince Priebus, if you remember those names, Trey Gowdy, yeah. And it just goes on. Sean, let not your heart be troubled. We are going to hold hearings, and we are going to have investigations, and all of these people are going to well, none of them answered. They all got away with it. They always get away with it.
Always.
Comey got away with it, and McCabe, Brennan, Clapper, Strzok, Page, Lynch, Rice, Holder, Lois Lerner, Blasey Ford.
Yeah.
Everybody gets away with it. They lie. I was taught when I went to law school, there's something called perjury. And you better not do it, because if you do it, you could end up going to prison. But not them. Nobody gets called on it. They go before the U.S. Senate committee, let's say at the Kavanaugh hearings. They lie through their teeth, destroy a wonderful person, a wonderful family man. Not a single one has ever been called on it.
No, you, which you write, and at some point you do write, and I love it. You write that these animals destroyed the life of General Michael Flynn, and you go on to mention Nick Sandman, the Covington, Kentucky kid, and also Brett Kavanaugh. And you did already allude to Blasey Ford got away with just flat out lying, ruining his life. All the women, Avenatti, of course, he didn't get held accountable for that, for something else. But yes, they get away with it. But maybe now, and you wrote this column before Rick Grenell declassified those documents. Maybe now, Doe Fisher from the American Spectator, who writes beautifully, wonderfully, I'm telling you, folks, check him out. Maybe now there will be some accountability. What do you think?
You know, you hope so. But after about 3 years, I'm getting back into that New York Mets 1962 mode where it's hopeless. Remember how the Mets would be up in the seventh and eighth inning.
And they lose the game.
You just knew the Marv Throneberry's going to drop a ball.
That's right.
Or Shoot Coleman. You have no chance.
No, listen, I said the same thing to Bernie a couple of days ago. There's no history that says it's going to happen. I mean, go back to Hillary Clinton. How do you get rid of 33,000 emails? That's criminal. So you can start with her and nothing happened.
There's a term called spoliation. I teach it to my law students. And in addition to being a rabbi, I'm with a group called Coalition for Jewish Values, where more than 1,000 Orthodox rabbis who share the same politically conservative viewpoint. And I'm also a law professor. I teach my students that, for goodness sakes, if the government is investigating and they ask you for evidence, don't believe the stuff you watch on the TV movies and on TV and on the movies. You've got to give up the evidence, because if you play games with evidence, you're going to turn into Martha Stewart, where she ends up becoming an expert on how to iron prison uniforms.
So, true.
I tell the students, you can't get away with that stuff. You, as an attorney, when you become a lawyer and they ask for that kind of evidence and your client says, maybe we could set it on fire, maybe we could lose it, maybe let the dog eat it, don't play games when they want, because they'll put you in prison. Yet Hillary Clinton, exactly as you just said,
right?
She took evidence. She's under an investigation. She destroys the evidence. Oh, it was only about yoga. Like she's in yoga. Like, right? She's really. Right. And so she can't sit in a lotus, just like she never ended up as a POTUS. And she destroys evidence, and she got away with it.
Jim Comey, I'll never forget this, Bernie and I were working together that day. Jim Comey went on television on that July afternoon and laid out exactly why she's guilty for 30 minutes.
And then said, I shouldn't indict her.
Right. So tell us this, in your article, in your column, I should say, A Time to Hate, which Bernie's been talking about, to Bernie's credit, for a week, and he's right, the American Spectator, you say it's not too late. And my question to you is, as a cynical guy just like you, what can we do to reverse this trend?
First of all, we have to re-elect Trump.
Bingo.
We have to, because the entire system is structured in such a way that if he does not get elected in November, the first thing that happens after Biden gets elected, assuming Biden still remembers in January what happened during the vote in November, the first thing that's going to happen is that they're going to put an end to all the investigations. They'll name Durham a judge somewhere in Durham, North Carolina, and that'll be the end of that. They will close down that investigation. They will close everything down just the way Biden closed down the people that were checking out his son out in Ukraine. You just put the prosecutors off. They'll take over the committees the same way they turned around the committees in the House, and they turned the House committees from working for the people instead to becoming full-time investigatory bodies looking into nonsense and proving nothing and finding nothing. They will do that with the Senate. They will clamp everything down, and we will never get to the bottom of it. So when you ask me, what is there left? What can we? I hate to say it, but it took 3.5 years. Trump came up with a very nice slogan about drain the swamp, and I don't blame him, but he's so busy trying to prevent the swamp from swallowing him into it that he has not been able to drain the swamp. And if they stop this process that's already taken 3.5 years, if that doesn't continue next year, these people will indeed completely have gotten away with it.
No doubt.
It's a crime. It is a crime.
It really is. It's an injustice of a magnitude we have not seen in this country's 200-something years. The Doe Fisher from the American Spectator, you also wrote columns. One was entitled, the most recent, May 18th, Obama on Incompetence, and also Blame Trump. Those are two great columns, and we don't have time to talk about it because we just don't have the time, but they're fantastic. Everything is Blame Trump. You say President Trump's not perfect, but he's done an excellent job. I mean, those are one of the statements you make in the articles. But I urge all our readers to go to the American Spectator, go to our website, and check out Doe Fisher in the American Spectator and read A Time to Hate and all his other articles. Doe Fisher, I hope you come back on the Bernie and Sid Show.
Thanks so much for having me. It really was a lot of fun.
And it was great.
Finally, something I don't have to hate.
There you go. How about that? And let's go Mets. Yeah. Whenever we get back on that field, Dover, we're going to be good. I could promise you that. Maybe not a World Series, but we're going to be good. Hopefully we get that back soon, too.
And Trump 2020.
And Trump 2020. They're right there.
I need your understanding.
All right. Wrapping up hour number three, Bernie and Sid Show. By the way, kicking ass lately in the ratings.
You tell me that
last 2 weeks.
So. You tell me that.
Just killing it.
Damn right.
Damn right.
Open this bitch up.
You know what I'm saying, man? Every single phone line lit since 6 a.m. every morning now. You folks love to talk to us, and you should, because we're here every day. Braving the elements, unlike anybody else in our business.
Yes, this is not... We're here in the studio.
We're here. Now, Boomer's not in the studio, and I don't even know about Berman and those other whatever.
Nobody's in the studio.
Nobody. Taking the train.
We are in the middle of... We are at 2 Penn Plaza. We're above Penn Station, where the inmates are basically living. The Rikers Island inmates are living downstairs in Penn Station.
Yeah, we're here.
And that's where we come through and up to the 17th floor to broadcast to you folks.
Because we practice what we preach, and we're here, and we deserve a lot of credit. So if nobody else wants to give it to us, I will. Here's Chris on Staten Island online, too. Good morning, Chris. Hello, Chris. All right, Chris, that was good. No, you're there. Okay, go ahead, buddy.
How you doing, Bernie? Let me just say I enjoy you guys every morning. You guys just keep me going every day.
Thank you.
I'm just calling to let you guys know, and let your viewers, your listeners know, we're having a rally to take back our country here.
Where's that, on Staten Island?
Yes, it is, by Silver Lake Golf Course.
Yeah.
Silver Lake Golf Course on Staten Island, a rally tomorrow. Hey. What time?
1 o'clock. We would love to have you guys come down there. We want everybody to come down, even people that lock themselves up in their house. We don't care.
All right. We would come, but we can't afford the Verrazano Bridge.
I'll pay for your toes. How's that?
Good answer.
No, listen. Thank you, Chris. Silver Lake Golf Club in Staten Island, 1 o'clock, folks. Head out there. It's important. I mean, this place is – they're trying to kill this place to turn it into some socialist utopia. It never ends up being – it ends up being socialist, but not a utopia.
One more quick call. Donald Trump, the president of the United States, successfully taking hydroxychloroquine as tests have proven time and time again. For the most part, overwhelmingly, it's gone very, very well. Here's another example. Here's Angela. She's also on Staten Island, on line 4. Good morning, Angie. How are you?
Hi, good morning, guys. I love your show.
We love
you. Wanted to give you guys an input on that hydroxychloroquine.
Yeah.
My sister was in the Staten Island Hospital for 11 days, near death with double pneumonia, and the drug that saved her was the hydroxychloroquine with the erythromycin. I was so happy that the hospital was able to give it to her, and it saved so many lives.
Well, do us a favor. First of all, we're very happy your sister is okay, because you sound like a darling. Do us a favor, Angela, and send that story to C-O Joy Behar on The View. Because that witch, she needs to hear more stories like this instead of going on television and sounding like a complete a-hole every morning. You know what I'm saying?
She is a witch, because they're knocking the president, because that's the drug that he said we could do it. We could,
of course,
you know,
right. The politicization of a therapeutic drug, man. Who would ever have thought that would happen? That would occur. She's an ugly magpie, ugly on the inside, uglier on the inside than she is on the outside.
And that's not easy. That
is saying something. just an awful, awful.
Hanging on the promises and the songs of yesterday.
Yeah.
And I've made up my mind.
I think Tony Katane was on the cover. What do you call that? Not the trunk. Front of the car. What do you call that?
The cover.
The hood. Tony Katane, who was hot back then. OJ was with her. She was on the hood during this video.
Of the car during the video.
Yeah, the car, yeah.
The Whitesnake video.
Yes!
Yeah, no, listen, this is a great motivating song, though. I mean, you got to admit, here I go again on my own.
Absolutely.
That's the way people have to think now. There are a lot of people that are dejected and depressed, perhaps. Just think like that. Think like this. A picture that song in your mind. Sing that. Put that in your iPod or whatever the hell you have these days. On your iTunes or all any of that stuff. Look, that's the way the guy down in Belmore, New Jersey, the dude who opened the gym, his name is Ian Smith. He's got a lot of press recently. He opened up for 2 days in a row, and he's open again today. I don't know what's happened this morning. Yesterday, they gave him another summons. They gave people citations to customers leaving the gym. One guy refused to give his name. He got arrested.
I mean, come on.
The gym is operating at 20% capacity. They're doing everything that they're supposed to do, that the tyrants are telling them to do. They're doing it, and yet they're still getting hassled. And here is what the guy, one of the owners, not Ian Smith, but the other owner, this is what he said about the whole situation yesterday.
These measures can be put into place by anybody. If Walmart can be safe by throwing a mask on and only letting a certain amount of people in line, then we can go above and beyond that.
I mean, that is him. That's Ian Smith.
Okay. Well, yeah. The point is, yeah, if Walmart can do it and all these other places, we can do it too. Otherwise, we're going to die. We're going to die forever.
Well, here's the meme that I just saw on Instagram, and it goes to exactly what you're talking about. It went from flatten the curve to not until we find the cure. It went from social distancing to stay at home until we say so. It went from weeks to we don't know how many months. It went from we're in this together to snitch on your neighbors. It went from liberty to comply or be fined and go to jail.
Well said. Very well. I love some of these memes are so
good,
so deep, so on the money.
God, they're orgasmic.
They really are. And by the way, not for nothing, maybe not as articulately or as succinctly. We have been saying that ourselves.
The whole time.
The whole damn time. Moving the goalposts.
Not as articulately and succinctly.
I know, whatever. We're saying like, I'm from the Bronx, you're from Brooklyn. Right. We've been saying it.
Yes.
We know what the hell they're up to. They're slow rolling it. They're moving the goalposts. And we're dying in the meantime. And now they want to extend these unemployment benefits where, you know, you get your usual $400 check from the state, if you're lucky, and then the federal government throws another $600 on top of it, so you're getting $1,000 a week. That lasts till January 31st in Pelosi's latest bill, in which she wants to let out all the federal prisoners over 50, if they promise not to murder somebody. I swear to God that's true. She wants to extend that unemployment situation that I just spoke about to January 31st. Now, in which case, there'll be no motivation. She wants to get the people to be complacent. Yeah, okay, we'll stay home. Keep sending us a check. Typical Democrat mentality. Let me just sit home and take a check. Just cash a check from the government and let them take care of it. Let the place die. As long as I get my check, I'm good to go until after Christmas. Well, that's not the way it's going to work. That's not the way it should work. We're going to die in the meantime if that happens. And speaking of, I want to go back to, we had this great author on from the American Spectator, Dove Fisher, A Time to Hate. He talked about nobody receiving accountability for the crimes, the various crimes they committed. Everybody from Hillary Clinton on down or whatever you want to say up, because she's as low as it gets. I know, right? But the Peter Strokes, the Comeys, the McCabes, the Lynches, the Rices, the right now this thing about Rice, Rick Grinnell, he's the acting DNI. He's also the ambassador to Germany, but they made him the acting DNI for a while. So he declassified a bunch of stuff, and we found out all these mutt creep dirtbags like Brennan, McCabe, Rice, and all these other people
are a bunch of scumbags.
Thank you, Maxine Waters. You're 100% right. They were saying on TV that Trump is a Russian agent, Clapper, all of them. Or Trump is a Russian agent. There's Trump-Russia collusion. Grinnell released the testimony, the transcripts, that where behind closed doors they told Congress under oath they saw absolutely no evidence of any Trump-Russia collusion ever. Nothing. Zero. Squat. Nothing. So he released that, and that set off a storm. Of course, Adam Schiff knew it. He had it. He wouldn't declassify it. He himself went on TV many, many times and said, I have concrete evidence that this president colluded with Russia. This is part of what Dove Fisher was talking about. The media went along with it. In fact, they took leaks from these creeps, and they made everybody think, wow, there must be something to this, because all these people keep saying it. I mean, they're all important people, the media, the New York Times, Washington Post, CNN, a clapper, I mean, and Brennan ran the CIA. Comey ran the FBI. There's got to be something to it. There was nothing to it, nothing. And yet, when Obama was leaving office, they knew there was nothing to it. They knew that, as they were meddling in the election, that Michael Flynn was a sharp guy. He's the incoming NSA guy. He's going to find out what they were doing all this time. This illegal spying, this meddling that they were engaged in, and this insurance policy that they set up. Now they want to implement the insurance policy. And Obama has, January 4th, the FBI sends a memo to Obama and company. General Flynn did nothing wrong. January 4th. January 5th, Obama has a meeting of this cabal of deep state Trump haters, these really sleazy people, all of them, McCabe, Comey, Stroke, Rice, Biden was there, Lynch was there, all of them. Sally Yates, the acting attorney general, and he basically tells them, I want you to continue to go after Flynn. And he makes everybody leaves. He keeps Comey and Yates because they're staying on, and he says, you guys have to continue to go after Michael Flynn. So they do. And then on January 20th, Susan Rice writes a memo because she knows something's not right. She writes a memo to herself, and yesterday, and she talks about how President Obama wanted us to do everything by the book. In other words, she knew something was wrong, so she was writing a memo to herself on the last day of the administration, just before she leaves the White House, and Rick Grenell declassified that yesterday, and it was very, very bizarre. And then, of course, January 24th, Peter Stroke went at the behest of James Comey and interviewed and ambushed General Flynn, and the collusion hoax was officially on.
Lisa!
It was on at that point, but I just want to play this clip from Britt Hume. Now, he wasn't a big Trump supporter. This is not Sean Hannity. This is not Mark Levin. This is not me. This is Britt Hume talking about that memo and this whole situation in general, all going back to what Doe Fisher from the American Spectator said. Listen to Britt Hume.
This whole memo is suspicious on many counts. First of all, it was written 15 days after the events it described had happened. There are several references in there to the president saying, I want everything done by the book, and Director Comey affirming that he's doing everything by the book. Of course, Mr. By the Book Comey, 4 days after this memo was written and as the administration was leaving, 4 days later, Director Comey, still in office at the FBI, slips around to the White House without the Justice Department's knowledge or approval, sends two agents down to the White House. He's bragged about how he knew that this was not according to protocol, where you're supposed to do interviews in the White House through the White House counsel's office. He avoided all that. That wasn't exactly by the book, was it? And that was the famous interview for which this whole case against Flynn has proceeded. So, you know, you add it all up and it looks very suspicious. And this is a big story. And the irregularities in the handling of the whole Russia investigation was a big story. It's just that the journalists don't like to hear about the irregularities because they bought the whole package. They went along and engaged in this headlong pursuit of this Russia collusion theory, which blew up in their faces, and now they don't want to hear about it. And in a sense, I guess I don't blame them, because it was the worst journalistic fiasco in my more than 50 years in journalism, and it continues.
Yeah, exactly. Well said. Well said by a guy who calls balls and strikes, if you ask me. I mean, again, I think I try to call balls and strikes, but I am, I'm more in the camp, more in than a guy like that. And this cabal of Quislings did try to overthrow this president, and hopefully they will be held accountable at some point. It may happen, it may not. The wheels are we've been disappointed in the past, as Doe Fisher pointed out. But let's hope. And you have to reelect Trump in order for this to come to fruition, because otherwise they'll dismantle the whole thing, no matter what Durham does in the meantime. Like he said, they'll send Durham to Durham, North Carolina, and just close it all down.
Yeah, no doubt. So years ago, I'm down in Miami, Boca Raton, Palm Beach, whatever. And I decide I'm going to start doing politics on my sports show. The first guy to do that. Now, maybe Keith Altman did, I don't know. But I was the first in Miami to actually start to move towards politics along with the sports. So I purposely went out and tried to find guys that were really big-time sports people, but also a really bright entrepreneurs, a political sense, all that good stuff. And I put together a roster of about 4 to 5 guys. I'm going to be completely honest with you folks right now here in New York City. This next guest was my best one. Best one.
He's brilliant. I've seen him many times on Fox News.
CNBC, all those stations. Now, from 74 through 85, he was one of the best quarterbacks in football. He and actually took the Redskins to consecutive Super Bowls, a 17 win over Miami and an 18 appearance against the Raiders. A star at Notre Dame, even in the College Football Hall of Fame back in 2003. So he had a wonderful NFL career. But as Bernie just said, he's a brilliant guy. He's got businesses all over the place. So Joe Theismann is our next guest. It's always great to talk to Joe. Joe, how you feeling, buddy?
I'm good, Sid. Bernie, you too. Well, it's great to catch up with you guys. You know, it's really funny. Growing up in Jersey, I used to listen to ABC, and it was it sort of brings back some memories just listening to some of the stuff just before we went on the air. But it was it's great.
Right.
I'm doing well. I hope everybody out there is staying safe and you know, adhering to the guidelines. I mean, we've gotten to a point where we're opening things up more and more now simply because people have been smart and doing the right thing.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, Joe. And Joe is a New Brunswick, New Jersey guy. And I felt the same way. I'd be down in Miami and I would hear...
Sid, South River.
I'll get
all those calls from everybody in South River.
Excuse me.
You're hilarious. South River. And I would do the same thing. I'd be out of Miami and hear the traffic on the GW Bridge and actually miss it. But, you know, you talk about reopening now and adhering to all of the policies and doing the right thing. Now Joe, I know you own restaurants in D.C. And are those still open? What businesses right now are you trying to maintain during this difficult time?
Well, first of all, I do motivational speeches basically as a primary job now. And then, of course, I do the other shows, which you mentioned. But I've had all of March, all of April, all of May, June, and everything's actually not all been canceled, but quite a few have been postponed to 2021. But all gatherings basically have been shut down. And in our restaurant, we still have the restaurant closed here in Alexandria, Virginia. My partners and I have seven. They have seven. I'm just a partner in the one. And it's the thing is what we're doing is we want to open the kitchen so that we can service the community. We want to service the elderly and do some things coming up here very shortly. But it's everybody, you know, this is not a light switch. That's the thing that everybody has to understand, Sid. This isn't like it came and it'll go. This is going to take some time and we need to be smart. And believe me, I know everybody is climbing a wall right now. They're going nuts. You've been cooped up forever. You want to just get out and do something. But I think now these next 3 weeks are so critical so that we can find out and continue to you know, garner data that says it is safe to go here. It is safe to do that. But we can't just, you know, cast caution to the wind and say, I'm not going to wear my mask. I see people out in grocery stores and I don't go many places, but you see them out without masks and it's like, there is no thing as normal anymore. That's what everybody has to understand. And I don't look at this from a business standpoint. People say, I don't like change. Well, change is coming, and I'm a firm believer that people aren't opposed to change. They just don't want to be changed.
Well,
so this is an opportunity for us to be able to sort of reevaluate our families, ourselves, our futures, and everything else.
You're right, Joe Theismann on the Bernie and Sid Show. You're absolutely right. Look, especially indoors, the masks. It's not an unfair request. If we're going to open, you're going to wear a mask indoors. I say I agree to that. That's fine. Outdoors may be another topic. It might be because.
I agree.
But my question to you is this, Joe, because you have a divide, a blue state and a red state. It seems like the red states are more willing to follow the rules, to allow businesses like yourself, small businesses and big businesses as well, to act like adults and do the right thing, which they're capable of doing, whereas the blue states want to treat people like children, and they don't trust them to do the right thing, which they would do. I mean, they're responsible people. They started their own business to begin with, so they have to have something on the ball. You got to give some trust, put some trust in the American people to do the right thing, and I think they will.
I agree with you. And, you know, the facts bear out exactly what you're saying. Is, you know, Georgia, to me, is a great template. Because it was the first state to open up, and so now we get to see what do the cases look like? Is there an occurrence, a continuing occurrence of the COVID virus? Is there an increase in numbers? You know, that said something to look at from a state standpoint. I thought President Trump did a tremendous job by not taking the responsibility of opening up this country on the shoulders of the administration.
Yeah.
What he basically did is he said to all the governors, I am empowering you to run your states. This is what you should do. And do it in a very cautious way. Do it in a phased way like we're doing it. But give the people a chance to be able to survive and live.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we haven't seen the worst of this yet economically. You know that, don't you?
No, I feel
that. Oh, no, it's still coming, right?
Unfortunately, that is something we're going to have to deal with going forward. You know, and regarding the restaurant business, I said this the other day, is we in the restaurant business, we need to police ourselves. We need to tell all of the restaurant owners in an area you live in a state you live in, look, adhere to the rules that are laid out. If we're at 25% capacity, make sure you do it, because if you get shut down, it's not because people don't like you. It's because you violated something. We're given a chance now to be able to open up. So just follow the rules, and then we'll get to 50%.
Right.
And see how that flies. But I'm saying is I think it's important that the restaurant industry in itself, everywhere, has a chance to communicate with one another and say, listen, man, don't go to 50% if we're at 25.
Right.
Give it another month. I know it's tough. I know it's tough to furlough people. I know it's tough to cut salaries. I know it's tough to not get women and men and waiters and waitresses coming back, servers. It's difficult to get them to come back because they're making too much on unemployment.
That's right. They're killing it. So listen, so you're in the restaurant business. You're a motivational speaker. You've spoken about that. But let me turn the clock back, okay? Let's say, Joe Theismann, you're still, as you were, one of the best quarterbacks in the National Football League, and this is going on, and you're at home, and you're self-quarantining and doing all the right things, and you get a call from Joe Gibbs, and he says, listen, Joe, we're getting back next week. Commissioner Tagliabue, or whoever it was back then, Roselle.
Yeah.
We're going to go back and play football. How would you feel about that?
I think, well, first of all, it's the same thing as the restaurant. You have to make sure that if you're going to be around a group of people, you're going to be tested on a daily basis. There's a likelihood of something possibly happening, but I would be willing to go and try and do it in some type of a capacity. I don't believe it'll happen in the next 3 weeks, though, Sid. I mean, realistically, maybe 4 to 6 weeks, maybe 8 weeks, we get a chance to really get a feel. As the summer comes more and more, from what we understand from research, is that the virus doesn't survive as well in a warmer climate. So that's why I think you see the amount of cases down in the Florida area and warmer states, not quite as much as it is up north, New York and some of the other states.
Yeah. Hopefully that's a good omen for us.
And if he says, hey, look, if he says, come to work, you know, you go to work. Right now, the biggest challenge is for the new coaches. You know, there's 6 new coaches in the league, Ron Rivera being one here in Washington. How do you, you're Zoom meeting with everybody right now. The defensive line coach is meeting with the defensive line on a Zoom call, a conference call. And so now you don't get to go face-to-face. You don't get to install your systems. You don't get to create a culture. Veteran coaches with veteran teams will distinctly have an advantage if and when football starts, and I believe we will have football. Now, will there be people in the stands?
No.
I don't know, but no. I went through this. In 1974, there was a strike in the National Football League. I was a rookie then. And Billy Kilmer and Sonny Jurgens did not go to camp. Actually, Sam Weiss was the other quarterback that I replaced. So Billy and Sonny didn't go. I went in and I played. I played at RFK Stadium, 55,000 seats, 3,000 people in the stands. And
wow. It
is eerie. I'm telling you, it's like a modified practice. There are more people at training camps around the National Football League watching practices than there probably will be in stadiums if we get started. But at least we'll get football back.
Well, that would be great. And with baseball, and hopefully, I pray to God that it doesn't come down to pay. Because right now, it's bigger than pay. It would be a national morale booster for these athletes to go out there and play, even at a reduced rate.
Especially in baseball.
That's why the draft was so important.
Right.
The draft kicked off football. What, 9 million more viewers than they ever had? And I think they'll adopt some of the policies. You know, I've got a book coming out that releases next month, June 16th, called How to Be a Champion Every Day. And, you know, it's a business book with football stories in it. And the world of sports, the world of business, and our own lives all parallel one another.
Wow.
So, and we need to do, you know, from an athletic standpoint, baseball's talking about maybe 3 weeks from now starting to put together some type of a spring training program. Just the fact that we get a chance to talk about it gets, I think, people their mind off of what we're dealing with.
Definitely.
Yeah, we need that. We need that. Yeah. We'll bring it back on. We're going to bring it back on.
We need that breath of fresh air.
Yeah. We're going to bring it back on when the book comes out. We got to run. By the way, you were a rookie in 74 because you didn't play for Don Shula, God rest his soul, when he drafted you in 71. You went to Toronto instead.
You will never forgive me.
This guy's got some. He's got some recall.
Between New York and Miami, he said, I got no chance with you.
It ain't easy. It ain't with this guy. He knows all.
Oh, God.
No,
Joe Theismann, you're great.
You're great, Joe. What a great appearance.
We'll see you in a few weeks with the book, and thank you very much.
Thanks, guys. Take care.
Excellent job. Thank you. The great Joe Theismann.
My daddy had a heart like a 9-pound hammer. Think he even did a little time in the slammer.
What was I thinking?
Back here on the Bernie and Sid Show, heard everywhere on the 77 WABC app. That's right. We can get country on you as well. We like that stuff, as a matter of fact. The new stuff, the new country. What's that?
You do like the new country, yes.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm dying over here.
Oh, you're dying. Okay.
Yeah, I'll make it, though. It's fine.
All right.
I took hydroxychloroquine this morning.
Give him mouth to mouth, Matt.
Surely.
Wouldn't be the first time, right? No, listen. Look, Michael Goodwin has a great column out this morning. I'm going to get back to the local stuff momentarily, just real quick. The president, we talked to Doe Fisher from the American Spectator. The president's doing an excellent job. He had his finger on the pulse as citizen Trump, then as candidate Trump, and then as president Trump with regards to China. And now China has perpetrated a horrible, horrific crime against humanity on the globe. And the president wants to deal with it. And one way he's dealing with it is pointing it out. The other is cutting funds off from their accomplice, the World Health Organization, which went out there and parroted China's lies that there's no human-to-human transmission and that China's been transparent, they're great people, blah, 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 blah. And Michael Goodwin says that the media is undercutting Trump's tense battle with China. And he's right. They're taking their side, I mean, left and right. One of their headlines, this is a headline from the New York Times that Michael Goodwin points out. China hits back, talking about against Trump. China hits back in words and aid pledges as America goes at it alone. And, of course, hits back implies, as Michael Goodwin points out, that America started it, that we started it. Can you believe this? So the president is all over it.
Unreal.
And he took China to task yesterday. He said this.
We had a great success going. Things were really going along. And then China gave us a wonderful gift, okay? And it wasn't pretty. What it came out of China, just in case you had any questions, John, it came out of China, spread to Europe, but also came here. And the whole world became infected by this horrible thing.
Will you take steps?
Yeah,
to hold
China should be held responsible for what they've done. They have hurt the world very, very badly. They've hurt themselves also, but they've hurt the world very, very badly. Yeah, they should be held responsible.
And listen, the world pretty much is united now against China. It's the people here in this country, the media and the Democrat politicians that want to give them a pass, won't call out China by name for a lot of reasons. They have ties, you know, Hunter Biden, and B, they hate President Trump. So anything that he's for, they're against. But Michael Goodwin points out that it is because of President Trump. He writes regarding the other countries calling China out, wanting to hit back, having some accountability. He writes, indeed, it is only the United States leadership, and that means Trump, that gives all those other countries the backbone even to demand an investigation. So it's President Trump's his set of you-know-whats, and that's what he has. And he was right all along, but you have this, again, this other punk in a pantsuit, Pelosi. Listen to what she says. I mean, these guys committed what was ultimately worse than what Osama bin Laden did. Listen to what she says.
Let me just say that what the president is saying about China is interesting. It's interesting.
Diversion.
Let's keep our focus on meeting the needs of the American people. opening our economy.
You ain't opening crap. You want to slow roll this right. garbage. You want to extend this unemployment that we just talked about that is disincentivizing people to go back to work. You want to extend it to a January of 2021.
She's in the CNN camp, which right now is doing a story. Experiment shows how germs can spread at a restaurant. And they've got a couple of dummies sitting there, and they're showing saliva. They're making it very, very clear, in their opinion, that opening up a restaurant is actually right. very, very dangerous.
You can't reopen everything because we can't reelect this orange buffoon. We can't do it. Now, let's get back to the local stuff real quick because we don't have a lot of time here. The beach situation, which I think is going to be moot because the weather's not going to be great. Hopefully, that's not going to be the case, but it looks that way now. They were wrong about yesterday and today. It was supposed to be rainy because of the hurricane. They were wrong about that.
Yeah, but
they could be wrong about this weekend.
They could, but they're still calling for temperatures in the low to mid-70s. That is beach weather.
Here in the city.
Well, no, it's a 10-degree, 8-degree difference, but
that's right.
But that's still kind of beach weather.
If you're sitting at the beach at 60 degrees and it's windy, trust a guy that's been living out there since 1991.
That's chilly.
It is chilly. So the mayor, of course, this is a lazy slob, incompetent, a piece of garbage. It was like Memorial Day just snuck up on him. He was totally unprepared for Memorial Day. Didn't train any lifeguards, not opening the beaches. Everybody around them, the Jersey Shore, Long Island, all the suburbs, everybody's opening beaches. They have everything ready to go, and he has nothing ready to go. He says, you can walk on it maybe, but if we catch you in the water, we'll drag you out of it. This guy is so incompetent. It's so bad that he actually has the Democrat politicians on Long Island calling him out. Laura Curran, the Nassau County Commissioner.
I like her.
She's reopening beaches, but she's saying, listen, we can't handle people from the city because we have to cut down to 50% capacity because of Cuomo's edict. So it's 50% capacity. Just allowing our own people to go is going to be a problem. But anyway, she called the mayor irresponsible and short-sighted.
Perfect.
And now Long Beach.
She's got a nice set of tennis balls.
That was really funny.
That
was funny. You can't touch the balls. You can't touch other people's balls.
That's right.
So Todd Kominsky, this guy who, he was one of the authors of the no cash bail law that Cuomo signed. That was disastrous.
He's your neighbor.
He lives like, I swear to God, I'm not kidding you, 3-4 blocks down from
him.
And I know I'm good friends with the family that helped get him elected. Dare I mention their names? The Brodskys. Wonderful people. I love them. They probably hate me now. But he said this about Mayor de Blasio. It's a shame Long Island has to turn away city beachgoers to protect its residents and ensure safe beaches. But until the mayor gets his act together and makes his own beaches safe, that's the only responsible move. That's Todd Kominsky and Laura Curran, both Democrats. Let us go to Ed. Ed is in New Jersey. Good morning to you, Ed.
Hi. How are you guys doing?
Eddie, how are you, brother?
I'm good. Here's my question. Well, here's my comment. This whole virus thing is about saving lives. I mean, the bottom line is we're saving lives, and that's all you hear. 100 lives, 500 lives. And I looked it up. I'm wondering how many people die in this country. And in 2017, over 2 million people died.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, your point is people die every day, every month, every year. People die.
Listen, look, there's slow rolling the economy. I'll make the analogy again. If you want to stop people from dying by crippling the economy, reduce the speed limits on the highways from 65, 55 down to 15 and 25. You'll save a lot of lives. But you'll also ruin the – it's not practical. It's just not practical. You can't do it. That's what they're doing here. Sean is in Vernon, New Jersey. Good morning to you, Sean.
Good morning, guys. Best show on the radio by far.
Well, thank you, come on now. You're right, Tom.
Oh, that's easy, man. You guys got that easy.
Thank you.
But anyway, I wanted to just bring up the gentleman down in Belmar with the gym. Have you guys been following that?
Yes. We mentioned it. I played a clip of the guy
earlier
this
morning. His name is Ian Smith.
Yes, Attila's Gym in Belmar.
And I said, I've got other buddies who live in the northern part of New Jersey, up by Paramus and that area. They own gyms, and they're waiting to see what happens with Ian to see if they'll open their own gyms in the northern part of the state, and right now they're a little bit shaky because he's been going through a very rough couple of days.
Well, you guys are the voice of the people. I always say that because you say exactly what I'd like to say, but I don't have the platform. So I'd like for you guys to fight for this guy. This guy is what we've been crying for and begging for this whole time. So we need to get behind this guy. I called the gym. I wanted to tell the guy that I support him, and the people around here support him, and he's got to fight. And look, our president, he talks about fighting back every day, and he needs to acknowledge this guy. I know, Bernie, your best buddies with him. Let him know. He needs to acknowledge this guy. He's a real American.
You're absolutely right.
Fight for him.
And he's a very articulate American. I mean, he's not some do gym owner. He knows the Constitution. He knows the rights. He's responsible. His name is Ian Smith. The gym is Attila's Gym in Belmore, New Jersey. We've been all over it the last couple of days. He got another summons yesterday. Some of the customers leaving the gym got citations. One got arrested. He wouldn't give the name, but he's going to get these summonses. They're $1,000 a piece every day. But we pointed out yesterday, there is the GoFundMe with the Shelley Luther down in Texas. She reopened the salon. She got $500,000. So he's going to be able to handle those summonses. Thankfully, the tyrant Murphy has not closed the gym down. That's a good sign. But I want to see some of these other guys who are waiting to see what happens. If everybody does it at the same time.
I know.
They can't fight everybody. They can't.
So tell Frank to open his gym.
Come
on, Frank. Open your gym.
Open your gym. Let's do it.
Come on, Frank.
We got to fight these dictators, this Goldman Sachs schmuck of Murphy, who's really not such a bad guy.
Phil Murphy?
Yeah, he's
in between Led Lamont and Andrew Cuomo. Okay, he's like in between. Is that fair? Great show today again. It's Cher's birthday today. Happy birthday, Cher. We both love her, Bernie and I, even though she's another political psycho. And loves Rosie O'Donnell, but it's a pretty good song. I like the song she did, too, from Mermaids. That was a good song.
I'll have to work that one in somewhere.
Yeah, that was a good song. Anyway, great job today by all you listeners. You continue to do a really good job of participating every morning. We love when these phones light up, and they start lighting up at 6 a.m. every morning. They don't relent till we get up the air at 10 o'clock and Brian Kilmeade takes over. So we want to thank all you for doing a great job. As always, our three guests today, Joe Theismann, terrific. The writer, Dove Fischer, was great. And Councilman Joe Borelli. We love Joe Borelli.
Check out Dove Fischer at American Spectator.
Is it Dove Fischer or Dave Fischer?
Dove Fischer.
Fischer, okay.
We posted it at Bernie and Sid, Twitter and Facebook, but the American Spectator, the guy is fabulous.
Yeah, no, the one article I read was great. You've read a bunch. Three or four,
yes,
right? They're all good.
It's consistently good.
All righty. So, as I said, Brian Kilmeade coming up next. Then you'll get Curtis and Juliet. Then the mayor, the great Rudy Giuliani, into the great one himself, Mark Levin and John Batchelor. We got a big show tomorrow, right? Bill O'Reilly. Every Thursday, Bill O'Reilly. That's always a huge, huge get.
Hey, Bill, no spin, baby.
You got two Bill O'Reillys tomorrow, 7:20 and 8:40.
Yeah, look. We don't hold back.
No,
we
don't.
We give you what you want.
That's right. So until then, everybody, it's going to be a gorgeous day in New York City. Enjoy the sunshine. Go out and live it up. Take your mask off. Put your face in the sun. Come in tomorrow. Go home tomorrow. You'll look great. And we'll be back with you guys at 6 a.m. tomorrow morning. So until then, from all of us on the Bernie and Sid in the Morning Show, to all of you, peace!
Bernie and Sid in the Morning, streaming live on the 77 WABC app. Weekday mornings 6 to 10. Talk Radio 77 WABC.